Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
We begin tonight with an update on a story we've been following all week. Hannah Stevenson, the 16-year-old girl from Detroit, accused of stabbing a classmate to death with a screwdriver last month. At her arraignment this afternoon, Hannah received the harshest possible sentencing from the judge. She will be tried as a black adult.
Due to the extreme and violent nature of this crime, this court finds it fitting to try the defendant as an African American. Henceforth, you will be referred to for the jury by the name Wandell Brown.
Once the trial begins next week, all courtroom images of Hannah will depict her as a 300-pound muscular black man, and jury members will be instructed to imagine her as such.
We're going to do our best to make sure that Hannah is treated with the sympathy and sensitivity that she, as a photogenic white girl, deserves.
This is America. Nobody deserves to be treated as a black man.
Now that Hannah has been ruled black, the court has instructed local media to assume she's guilty, and the police have retroactively charged her with assaulting her arresting officer. Hannah's 24 character witnesses have been replaced by a single crack addict who goes by the name of Skaggs. Hannah's parents are, of course, planning to appeal the ruling, saying that their daughter should at most be tried as a black celebrity or a stunningly beautiful Filipino lady. Every time I hear a story like that, it makes me so glad I'm exempt from the legal system.
It's after the hour of one, and this is the month of January in the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for drawing near, that ye might be entertained and informed, and that your life might be made better in ways beyond imagining, my friends. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not really ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good things. It is Monday, January 24th. 2011, and welcome to Day 12. If you'd like to be part of today's program, though, it's 503-505-6964. That is 503-505-6964. That is 503-505-6964. With your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, whatever it is you might have on this fine Monday. You can also email if you like. It's rick at rickemerson.com. That is rick at rickemerson.com. You can email Dawn Taylor if you like. It is Dawn, D-A-W-N. At rickemerson.com. We had to try some variation on the E.H. vending contest at some point, where it's sort of a what's in Dawn's mouth? Sort of a what is Dawn pouring into her mouth at this moment? And it would just be an auditory clue only, but you would have the same snack every day all through the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So this is just, this is not like the actual clue, but so like every, hold on a second.
Just finding me a random snack?
No, so like, okay. I'm just simulating. This is not the actual clue for today, but this is just an artist's rendering. So, like, every day, I would say, like, and now it's time for today's clue in the What's in Dawn's Mouth contest. I mean, And then you just proceed in that fashion through Friday.
And as long as it's not corn nuts, no one will guess.
I wish I hadn't eaten those.
Those are potato chips, I believe.
Regular Lay's Classic.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I don't, and I don't know anybody who does, enjoy regular, unflavored, like Lay's potato chips.
No, they're like vanilla ice cream. They're like for putting other stuff on.
Yeah, what is the point of these? Here's the frustrating thing, and this is no knock against the EH vending, understand. They just, it's like when you fish, John. You don't put what you like to eat on the hook. You put what the fish like to eat on the hook. Here's the thing about Lay's classic potato chips. I'm sure that there must be an audience for them because, again, that audience exists in substantial enough numbers to make sure that many varieties of these bags of chips exist. My thing is that Lay's unflavored, or, you know, just regular potato chip flavored potato chips, the reason that they're frustrating is because they're too insubstantial to be used as some sort of a dipping agent. You can't be scooping things out with these. It causes all sort of agita in my life.
I like plain potato chips. There's only one time I actually like plain potato chips. Patrick loves potato chips, but he likes the big, heavy-duty Ruffles.
Yeah.
The Lay's, wavy Lay's. And he won't dip them in things. He will just eat them. But he also likes the big, substantial ones. Any plain potato chips, the only time I like them is when I'm having a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
You put them on top.
No, I eat them separately. But the thing is, there's just that whole flavor combination of the sort of peanut butter and jelly. You get the savory and the sweet and the salty. Then you get extra salty and crunchy. So you have extra multiple textures. Then if there's a giant, like, really cold glass of milk with it, you have this trifecta where you're basically just covering all your bases in one meal.
Here's the other thing about that, too, is if you're having just the regular potato chips with your, in this case, your grilled cheese sandwich, your peanut butter sandwich, your egg salad sandwich, it's like a neutral kind of crunch almost. Not entirely flavorless, because, again, there's the salt, little hint of potato, a slight layer of grease. But it also is just, it's not going to overwhelm the taste of whatever you're eating. It's just going to augment it. It's going to bring out the flavor ever so slightly because of the salt and then again the added crunch and snap.
I also admire them as an ingredient for the tops of casseroles.
Yes.
It is something I don't do. And I also don't make that many casseroles because I grew up in a casserole-free household. So I had to, like, teach myself the whole joy of casseroles as an adult. But there's still, it's like, the reason we never ate casseroles because my mother desperately wanted us not to be white trash.
Right.
And so
how'd that work out?
Yeah, not so well. I mean, you know,
a bit of a scattershot result.
You can take the girl out of the trailer,
yeah.
But you know. So, even if we did have casseroles, there's no way my mother would have put potato chips on them because that would have been just too trashy. But I have had the first time I ever had the funeral potatoes, the fabulous Mormon dish of the funeral potatoes, and yeah, and they had the potato chips crumbled on top as the crunchy topping of the funeral potatoes. My God, that's delicious.
Boy, the joy of casseroles just sounds like the worst-selling cookbook in the history of the world. It just seems like the saddest cooking volume you could possibly find anywhere.
Well, the thing with casseroles is, as someone who knows how to cook, I realized that the casserole is a lot like the crock pot in that it's a tool.
Right.
It's a way of making things. You don't have to use cream of mushroom soup. There are other things you can do within this entire genre.
It's like you just have a window into my childhood sometimes, just right into my grandmother's house. Here's what she used. She used the casserole itself was just a tool for serving me gruel and mushroom soup. The Pyrex tray or whatever in which you made the casserole, that pan was itself a tool just for reducing the noodles to so much gelatinous mush. Just making sure that you cook them until any sort of form has actually gone out of them, and they don't have any kind of shape or demonstrable feel or texture at all.
Whereas we did not do the casseroles because that was white trash. My mother was intrigued by the advent of the crock pot because my mother would get fixated on these fancy new things that she thought were, like, special and delightful. Like, we went through about 3 years where she made nothing but bundt cakes.
Because she loved the pan?
Yes, because she loved the pan.
Was it a new... Let me ask you this.
The bundt cake was...
Was it new at the time, or
yes,
was it just
was.
New to her?
No, it was...
Is there a Mr. Bundt?
In, like, the 70s, there was this whole bundt cake thing where they started being manufactured and put out, and you could not throw a rock without finding a recipe for bundt cakes. Every ladies' magazine had bundt cake recipes. There were cake mixes that came out specifically designed to be used to make.
So you liked
bundt cakes. So yeah. So my mother's cake, for example, her signature cake she came up with, but that she found the recipe for and that everyone loved was a rum cake, of course.
Of course.
And there was rum in the frosting. It was made with some kind of, like, super buttery cake mix that you actually added butter to and then used that. And then there was rum in the cake mix. Then once the cake was made and while it was still warm, you made this sugar syrup with rum in it. And you poked holes in the top of the cake and you soaked the whole damn thing in rum. And people loved that cake. And she brought that cake to everything. And after she died, and I was, this guy was... who owns a bar that she used to drink at, of course, was throwing a wake for her. I had this weird, almost spiritual moment where I realized I was going to have to make a bundt cake. I was going to have to make that damn rum cake.
This cake is from Mama.
For my mother's damn wake. Or people, it just would not seem right. never got around to making the cake, and I woke up from a dead sleep at like 3 a.m. the day of the wake, and I swear to God, I heard my mother's voice saying, get off your lazy ass and make my effing cake.
Mama needs her bunt.
Yes.
It's like one big C.W. McCall song where you grew up. You know, you talk about phrases that just that do not induce a desire to eat, and rum bunt is one of those things.
Rum bunt.
Or bunt rum. But is there a Mr. Bunt or a Bunt's Fine Pastries, or is that a German word
of
some kind?
Yeah, it's a German word. It's apparently some kind of a German construct. And the bunt cake, it's the traditional bunt pan is a very super heavy-duty metal, kind of like the edge brownie pan.
Right.
Really super heavy, so it conducts heat really well, but also it makes, you know, bunt cakes tend to be fairly substantial.
Yeah, no, they're a hearty cake. It's a dense cake is what
yeah.
it is. And then it's just got that weird, and it's like some weird half-ridged donut. You know, it's just the weirdest cake. I never really thought about that until just the moment, how strange bundt cakes are.
So, yeah, so my mom was fixated with the bundt cake, and then, of course, then came the crock pot.
Yeah.
And the crock pot, my mother was a terrible cook to begin with. She was actually a pretty decent baker. She was good with cakes and cookies, but a terrible cook otherwise. And the crock pot, to her, was just this godsend, because all you had to do was put meat in a pot and dump stuff on top of it, and it just leave it all day.
And just let it sit. What most people saw as the disadvantage in the crock pot, I think many people saw as the upside, because you didn't have to be around.
Yeah.
And you could actually set yourself, oh, I got something cooking in the crock pot at home. And it made it seem like you were Julia Child, like you just had, like you were going to be getting your simmer on with something, you know, like some sort of southern dish that had to marinate its own juices for the better part of a day.
And, you know, and it's like with your busy, busy life, you don't have time to to stand there and actually, you know, make some food. This way, you just pour several cans of something over something else and go away, and it's ostensibly edible.
It was the
and sometimes it is, sometimes not so much.
The ideal cooking tool for today's modern busy career woman, Don, is what that was.
Which my mom wasn't. My mom was a housewife at the time that the crock pot came around, so I'm not really sure why.
Happy hour.
That's true. She had to. She and my grandma had some hot games of Pochino to be playing while they were enjoying their rum and coke.
Yeah, you don't want to miss out on the half price special that Clancy has going on until 4. All right. Well, in any event, I don't even know what I was going to talk about here. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us today. It's 503-505-6964. You can also Skype if you like. The Skype name is Rick Emerson Show. And email is rick@rickemerson.com or Dawn, D-A-W-N, @rickemerson.com. Text box on the website open as well. Don't forget, later on today, we will do clue number one for this week's EH Vending Contest. So, if you remember how we did it the first week, you remember how we did it last week, today a little bit of a hybrid of the two. It is essentially a variation on how we did it last week. So we have a particular snack food in mind. This may or may not be something that EH Vending stocks in their machines. It may be something that they stock in the machine of theirs that you've seen recently. It may be something that's in the box here. It may not. It may be none of those things. It is a commercially available, as my mother would say, it's like a button cake. As opposed to a homemade cake. It is a thing that you can purchase. You can purchase at a store of your choosing to some degree. You can go to the store and buy it. I'll put it that way. So this is a snack food. It is a snack item that can be purchased at the store. And we will be giving you one clue every day. And the caveat to that is you can't answer until Friday when the final clue is given out. If you answer before that, we're just going to we're not going to shred them because you can't really do that. What we're going to do is we're going to sort of think horrible thoughts about you. We're going to wish gout on you for about 10 solid seconds. And then we're just going to hit the delete button. I won't, but Cheryl will. Also,
you should actually save all of those names. And then when we're off the air, we will just look at them and laugh.
And then we'll have a coven get together and wish a plague on your house. Were you here when Cheryl talked about how she was responding to incorrect guesses?
I was indeed, yes.
She was sending like links to like fail blog entries and just sort of, you know, into like the have you seen that new
and sending back emails saying well that was an admirable try, but you're wrong.
You couldn't possibly be more incorrect if you were the prince of incorrectia. Have you seen that new meme, new to me anyway, that's going around where it's the dog and the garden hose, or the dog and the sprinkler?
No.
It's called like a margblarg or something. It's just like a whole bunch of letters don't make any sense. It is presumably the sound it's fantastic, and it's just this one meme. So it looks like a demotivational poster where it's the black photo with the, you know, the framed, and then in the you know, the big Times Roman text it says like margblarg. And then occasionally it'll be augmented with a sort of follow-up beneath it to customize it for that particular situation. Here's what it is. It's a great picture. It is a dog And it looks as though he was originally attempting to drink from a really, really powerful Rainbird sprinkler. But of course, dogs aren't that bright, and Rainbird sprinklers can be really, really strong, and have the water can come out with a great velocity.
Oh, yeah.
And so instead of being able to drink, the water's just going into his face, and the dog looks... the dog is sort of angrily barking into the spray of water, but of course, because he's an idiot dog, as he barks, the water is just going straight down his mouth. So it's sort of frustration and anger and confusion directed at the water, which will not obey the dog's command to quit spraying. And then the caption is just like... And apparently that is a thing that's posted in response to trolling on message boards. I haven't seen it done, but I hear tell. Urban Slang says that that is a thing that is now posted in a lot of places. If you got some troll that just won't shut his yap about something, you post that, and it's sort of a he won't listen to reason kind of a thing.
So Cheryl was sending that to people.
So she was just sending, sort of memes and fail blogs and demotivation things and taunts. And apparently, and I think weird emoticons every now and again. Because don't even, let me just say this, and this is I'm not going to get off of the whole thing. At some point this week, we have to do a little section where we talk about the emoticons that Skype offers you. Because they're all freaking weird, and they're terrifying. Like, they're all really, really strange. She tried at one point just to send me, like, a happy face last week about something. Like, did you handle that thing? Yes, I took care of it this morning. And, like, it was supposed to be a happy face, but then it's like the happy face looks at you, and then its eyes fall out or something. It's just... And I was like, what the hell is that? And she types, oh, my God, that was creepy. I just typed happy face. So it's very... But, like, there are no normal emoticons via Skype. It's very strange.
Well, I just know that I'm always really nice to Cheryl because I'll admit Cheryl kind of frightens me a little bit.
Yeah.
She's a really sweet, sweet woman. But there's this sort of steely underside sort of thing where I wouldn't want to cross her.
She'll ruin us.
You know, so I always, whenever I have to email something to Cheryl, I'm like, hey, hi, how you doing? I was just wondering. No pressure, no rush or anything. By the way, have I told you what an awesome job you're doing? Please don't hate me.
Winky clown hat, smiley face. Here's a rose.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, because she could destroy us professionally and personally.
Yeah.
You cross her at your peril.
She's smarter than both of us put together.
It's true.
And that kind of frightens me a little bit.
I really am the dog and the hose in every way. Coming up today, Cheney Watch, Snuff Watch. We'll talk to Mr. Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. That'll be coming up here in just a few. He's got depressing but inevitable movie news.
Ooh.
Speaking of movie news, next
hour,
around 2:15 or so, we'll talk to Mr. Eric D. Snyder, who writes for CinematicalFilm.com and is the host of Movie BS with Baron Snyder, Fridays at Cascadia.fm, right before Legion of News. He is at the Sundance Film Festival, so we're going to talk to him about half an hour from now, about 2:15 Pacific time. It's 3:15 Mountain time, just in case anybody's wondering. We got all that coming up, and again, we'll do clue number one for Name That Snack for this week. Although you can't actually submit your guess until Friday when the fifth clue goes out. That is brought to you by EH Vending, EHVending.com. Plus, Don Taylor is tracking the following stories for you on this Monday.
Rahm Emanuel can't be mayor of Chicago. Residents of Oak Hills are angry that they're getting a better road. And an arsonist is caught because he left one of his fingers behind at a crime scene.
Really?
Yes.
That's great. Let's see. What else do we have? Well, nothing else before we plunge into what we did last night or this weekend or whatever, except to say this. You know, I learned something this morning. It's not just internet memes and dogs and hoses and things and Mark Blarg. Do you know what the following internet term means, Don? This is a thing that the young people apparently say. It's a texting term.
Then I'll say probably not, but sure, let's give it a whirl.
It is three characters. It is L as in Larry, H as in Hobart, and then the numeral six.
Six.
LH6.
LH6.
It is not an alien planet on which xenomorphs reside.
Six. Late six.
If I were to text that to you, hey, Don.
LH6. I haven't a clue.
Really?
No idea.
All right. You have no guess at all.
I turned it upside down. Does it look like something? No.
It doesn't look like any sort of a crude. Like it's not like a rebus puzzle or anything.
It's because LH6. You're getting LASIK surgery.
No. See, perversely enough, I actually thought the same thing when I was trying to figure it out. There was a Newsweek magazine quiz about, like, you know, the whole like the secret language your kids might be using right underneath your electronic nose. LH6, I swear to God, according to Newsweek, which means that there's like a 50-50 chance that it's true, there's an equal chance that it's like the kids are just jacking up the editor.
Yeah, someone just having them on.
Yeah, where the kids are just like, no, LH6, it means... But apparently, according to the fine folks at Newsweek, LH6 means... Let's have sex. That's what it means.
This from the same people who told you about rainbow parties.
That's right.
And how Dungeons & Dragons is Satan worship.
And swinging on the flippity-flop.
Yeah.
That as well.
And that when you take ecstasy, it like gives you brain damage and you have seizures and you'll end up in a crazy house.
Yes. Well, that part is true, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I swear to God, this is the last one I'm going to give. You know what? According to Newsweek magazine, you know what kids... So there's LH6, okay, which is Let's Have Sex.
Let's Have Sex. All right.
There's LH8, which is Let's Have a Particular Kind of Sex, which one of your former presidents might have enjoyed.
Okay.
This one is
except
not even...
in that case, you're having it in the past tense.
Late. Or hate. Yeah, I guess. Eight.
Eight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the Newsweek guy, I swear to God, it says in the article, it says, so if LH6 is Let's Have Sex, and LH8 is Let's Have Oral Sex, we all know what LH7 means. And I just stood there and I looked at the page for a while and at no point did he clarify that. And I don't know if that was like a thing, like he was hoping we'd clue him in by pretending that he already knew. It seemed very much like an article written by a guy who was about 70. Do you know, according to Newsweek, final one, do you know what young people are now... do you want to know the slang term or do you know want to know the real world thing?
Ooh, I don't know. Give me the slang term first.
If I were to say to you, Don, you know, right, you know what I could really go for right now is... I swear to you, I'm not making this up, in the sense that Newsweek did report this as a fact. I can't speak to the veracity of it, but Newsweek, I swear to you, did say this is true. If I were to say, Don, I could really go for some Al Capone right now. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. That's not like... Is that a sex thing?
I'm not saying. Maybe
Al
not.
Al Capone?
Any idea? Any guess?
No.
I'll see if Aaron knows. Don't go Googling it now.
I won't.
I'm talking to Aaron.
Okay.
No, not you. I'm just saying. I trust you. I'm just saying, Aaron, you're listening now. Don't go Googling that stuff because then it ruins the whole point of me quizzing you here in a second. So, yes, some Al Capone. We'll get to Aaron Duran here in a second with the Week in Geek.
My first thought would be alcohol. But
that's what I thought, too. No, they say. They say apparently it's too obvious.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of a red herring, I think. No.
Well,
that's what they want. They want red herring.
That's... Is there such a thing as a red herring?
I don't think so. I think that's why...
Oh, because it's fake.
It's fake,
all right. I guess I could have sussed that out myself. Hi. I'm a product of outcome-based education. Activist judges, Don, the two responsible for my idiocy just there.
All right. The communists.
Next hour, we got Eric D. Snyder calling from Sundance. We'll talk to Aaron Duran here in a few with the Week in Geek and so forth. Later on, remind me to show you these awkward photographs of somebody, of a celebrity. You and I had sort of the same weekend in that I know you did a lot of sleeping and a lot of movie watching.
Mm-hmm.
I did no sleeping and a lot of movie watching. And then we were both at Scott Daly's house Saturday night for poker, which, by the way, anybody who follows Twitter would have known because Don and I just sent an increasingly retarded series of Twitters or whatever back and forth. Tweet.
Yeah.
I think I actually did for the first time ever say tweet on Facebook. I said, I think Don is tweeting across the table from me because it was in the interest of time. And then I was mocked because I said I would never do it. But so you and I were sitting across the table from each other at Scott Daly's poker game.
Tweeting about how the other one was tweeting about us.
I think Don is commenting on my Twitter use right now, and then it became a whole like escalating thing.
Well, and I posted a whole bunch of stuff on Facebook with like pictures.
Really? Oh, that's right.
Oh yeah, I was
talking about
pictures.
The gradual decline and fall of Bobby Roberts' House of Chips.
Yes.
Boy, that was a sad reversal.
He
was a bitter loser. I gotta say, he was not.
I love Bobby so much, but boy,
he was not happy about it.
He takes it personally.
He really did. And again, I'm not. It's I'm the same way. Again, this is pot and the kettle, and this.
And he came in third. He got his money back plus
$7. $7. No, it is. That's a he got like a 30% return on his money.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to talk. I'm not trying to. I'm not speaking pejoratively because I got to tell you, I am the guy, as you will recall, I am the man who is not invited. I am in fact disinvited. I am disallowed from attending any and all trivia nights with my wife because I am such a bad loser. I mean, he was grumpy about it on Saturday. I become a full-on child. I become a big baby Huey bastard about it. I just throw a huge Cartman-sized fit about trivia nights. So, he was still way better than I take it, but he was not happy. It wasn't like a, well, that sucks, or damn those pocket aces. It was like, for a minute, I thought he was going to pick up a chair and be hurling it across Scott Daly's living room, which he did not. But, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I lost all my money. And then after most of the people left, we played another cash game.
How'd that work out?
I came out $4 ahead with that one. So I only lost $16. Right. Plus the $5 I kicked in for beer foolishly because we all decided we needed more beer. And then when Diana got back with the beer, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Time
and
to go.
We each had one beer and we're going, we have to go home now. We're too tired.
We're old.
So I'm like, so glad we bought more beer.
Yeah, I lost my $20. I lost the $20 with which I staked my wife. The only thing, you know what made it an up for the evening, though, is that we went out to dinner with Diana and Prime beforehand.
I thought they bought you burgers.
They did. It was that whole thing of like, we'll get the tip. Okay. Well, the next one's on us, you know, and it's like, then you know when to give in. Like, you know when to stop protesting. It's really, you're going to? Okay, good. But so I was at the $40, but it ended up being not a wash, but I mean, I ended up not losing, you know, in the grand scheme of things, not really as much. I did write down this. This seemed really, really, really funny at the time. Less so today. Today it just seems obvious. This is something that Scott Daly said at 9:14. He just said, through a mouthful of food, by the way. So it's funny if you picture him going, the best part of Bugles, he says, this is a quote, the best part of Bugles, keep in mind he was talking about chocolate peanut butter Bugles, which Laura and I brought. We've decided that that's going to be our trademark snack, our signature snack now. He says, the best part of Bugles is that you can fill them with spray cheese.
Yes.
I don't know why it seems so important that I write that down.
It was very funny at the time.
I guess. Less funny now.
My favorite thing of the night was when Dan Clark kept getting bad hands.
Yeah.
And at the one point when he said, the last time I got a 2 and a gopher.
Which was, again, made no sense.
No.
Funny now. Hilarious
it
then.
It was hilarious at
the
moment.
It was really, and he was getting ready for his big beard off.
Yes.
Anybody know if he won?
I don't know. I didn't make it to the beard off because I ended up sleeping almost all of the rest of the weekend.
Wait, is this because of your new drugs or the drugs that got is it a new drug or just a refill of a prescription?
It's actually a new drug because I told her that the trazodone was kind of not really working for me and it made me feel really sluggish the next day.
Yes.
So, and I was hoping they would, you know, just bump me up to like Lunesta. So that I'll just be unconscious.
What is Lunesta?
Apparently, it's like Ambien, but there's less chance of you like sleep driving and I'm not going to walk out the front door and go down to Plaid Pantry or something. But instead, she gave me the stuff, and I can't honestly remember the name of it. One of the names it's marketed under is Vistaril. And
it sounds good.
And the thing is, she told me, she said, "Oh, it's kind of like a weak Benadryl." And I was like, because I've been having this, you've noticed how I sit and I have had this problem for months with compulsively scratching.
Yes,
And in the evening, it actually turns into full-blown hives. I'll scratch myself and it'll
hives.
And it'll swell up and it'll be itchy and it's horrible. And so I said, you know, and I told her, I said, I use nothing but, you know, perfume-free detergent, and I've tried changing things in my diet, and I don't know what it is, and I've decided it's nothing external. I've changed soap and shampoo and everything. It's for me. It's just for me being really tense and hyped up. And so she said, this does both. People take this for nerve-based hives. They
is this me? Am I giving you the hives?
No, it's just been life.
Okay.
Life has been, there's been a lot to think about and stress over the
all
last
right.
year
okay.
or so.
So
anyway, so she gives me this stuff, Vistaril, which is oxycone or xylene. I don't know what it is. But she says it's kind of like a Benadryl.
Right.
I go and I look it up online and I discover that, first of all, no, it is nothing like Benadryl. It's not an antihistamine. It's another thing that like just goes to your brain, kind of like trazodone, to try to make you happier. But also discovered it used to be sold under the name Atarax. And I took this when I was a kid. They gave it to me when I was a kid when I had compulsive itching problems and also when I couldn't sleep because I would be too wired from my asthma medication.
Right.
And I had looked it up years ago in the physician's desk reference to see what it was. And at that time, when I looked it up years ago, it was classified as an antipsychotic.
Wow.
So this stuff, they give it to people, sure, to help you, like...
mellow out.
Stop scratching and to sleep and stuff. But also, in slightly higher doses, they give it to people...
If you're crazy.
They give it to people to calm them down when they're having a hyper manic episode, when they're bipolar. They give it to people who have DTs when they're detoxing from alcohol.
To get the spiders off.
Excellent. So yeah, so it's like, well, you can take like I think one of these or two of these if you need two of whatever. So I took one on Friday night and slept like a dream. It was awesome. It was the best thing ever. And not like a drug sleep, just like real honest to God sleep.
Refreshing sleep.
Yes, it was wonderful. And I got up on Saturday morning and went and ran some errands with Patrick and got some breakfast. And about 20 minutes after eating breakfast, as soon as, like, basically all of the food was hitting my bloodstream, I suddenly just sort of went,
must find bed.
I could not stay awake. Absolutely could not stay awake. And I was like, oh, this is really bizarre. And it's like, I'm slurring. And I'm just like, take me home. I have to go to sleep. So I go back home. And like at noon, I go back to bed for 3 hours. And then I get up and do stuff, went out, played poker. Everything's great. Saturday night, get home about 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm totally wired up from like the poker and doing stuff. And I try to sleep and I can't. So I'm going, I'm going to try another one of these pills. I take one. I finally get to sleep about 3. Wake up at like 9 a.m. Fresh as a daisy. Feel awesome. This is great. Go out and do some stuff. Have lunch with Patrick. Soon as the food hits my system, again, just like, I need to sleep again
now. Is this one of those things where on the side there's like a fork with a line through it saying like, no,
I don't know. This has never happened to me before with anything I've ever taken. And honest to God, I came back home, went back to sleep, didn't get up until 5:45.
Is this like going to be a two birds with one stone where it's like a food aversion tablet as well? Because as soon as you start to eat, you just...
Well, I was afraid to eat breakfast this morning because I was afraid it was just going to knock me out.
Mission accomplished.
So I did end up going back to bed for an hour after, but then I got up at like 6.
It's like
so
a chemical shock collar.
Yeah.
I'm going to eat. No, I better not.
I better not because I have to stay alert.
Yeah. Well, okay then.
So I don't know. That's the oddest thing.
Is the antipsychotic property of it, is that like a cumulative dosage thing, or is that like a one, like if you're going crazy, give it to the kid and he'll calm down?
I think it's that. Yeah, it's just a one-time
deal. It's weird how they'll find stuff like that. How they'll find like things that, you know, how they find something that has multiple uses, like the whole thing of like aspirin is an anticoagulant, and it also it breaks fever and it reduces swelling, or like how trazodone is a sleeping aid, but it's also a muscle relaxant, but it's also an antidepressant, crazily enough. Or that, what is that thing? There was like the Propecia or something. It's like one of those hair things. They were like trying to, I don't know, they were trying to like literally like some anti-cancer drug or something.
Yeah.
And like the guy who was in charge of like filling the capsules kept going like, all this hair keeps growing on my hand. It's the weirdest thing. And they're like, I don't know, let's smear it on your back and see what happens. Oh, there's hair on my back. And, you know, it's just bizarre how they find things like that.
Well, this stuff, it's hydroxyzine. And apparently it's also used, it's also prescribed for motion sickness. So there's a number of things
that's weird.
Apparently this is
that's
good
thing with,
for.
That freaks me out a little bit. You know why? Because that means that they don't know how it works or why or what it really does.
No.
It just nukes something deep in your brain.
It does something weird to your brain, and it's like, it'll help you sleep. But also, the other thing is, for 3 days, have not had the hives, have not had the itch, had the itchiness. No, the whole itchy thing is gone.
All right, then.
And I'm sleeping like a baby. Just, I guess I could just never eat during the day.
Hey, but you know, it's better to look good than feel good.
That's true.
All right. Well, we know that we should do this. We'll go to Aaron Duran here in a second. So we got to back time everything from Mr. Eric Snyder, who is at Park City for the Sundance Film Festival. So we'll talk to him here in just a moment. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program coming up later on. We got your Snuff Watch, also your Cheney Watch. Again, we'll talk to Eric D. Snyder, who's at the Sundance Film Festival. And we'll have today's first clue. Or the first clue of the week, rather. We'll have today's clue in the E-Age of Ending Name That Snack Contest. And again, we're going to give you one clue every day about a particular snack, which is purchasable by you. And then once Friday rolls around and we give out the fifth clue, then you can send your guess to snack@rickemerson.com. That is snack@rickemerson.com. Yeah, that's what you should do. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Our good friend from geekinthecity.com, Aaron Geek in the City Duran. Hello, sir. How are you? Hello.
Aaron. Oh.
I swear to God, I picked up the phone. Hold on a second. It says it's giving me the option to,
What?
Whoa. Oh, hello. Oh. Hi. How are you doing there? Hey. Hey, champ. What's up?
That's awkward.
All right. Did I catch you off guard there?
No. No.
Okay. All right. Hey, did you hear my question earlier about Al Capone and that's code for?
I did indeed, and I did not Google it. So all right. I'm going to...
Do you have a guess?
I do have a guess. I got to make it radio safe guess, though.
All right.
My initial guess is because he was supposedly involved with the Valentine's Day massacre and lining people up, is that it has something to do with lining up and taking shots, as it were.
You're not talking about shots of alcohol, are you?
No.
Okay. No. No, it is.
Is this about spanking?
No. What's going on in the background?
Sure.
Do you have your radio turned up? Sir, do you have your radio turned up?
No.
Okay. Don, do you hear something in the background?
I do. It,
Sounds very much like his speakers are turned up, doesn't it? Or,
I don't know what's going on.
Or something snorting or sniffling or something.
Is there something? Is there some sort of sound or something playing in the background at your home?
No, there's really not.
It's very confusing.
It's us.
All right. Well, in any event, let me just say this, that Al Capone, apparently the young people use that as code for the heroin. So if you want some H, some smack, some horse, you say you want some Al Capone, and then they know to bring that, which, by the way, that is totally a tip off that this is made up, because there's no, there's no jump. Like, there's no.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible that he dealt that later on, but I don't think anybody thinks Al Capone. You think heroin. I mean, you always think booze, right? Like the prohibition thing.
Plus, kids don't know who Al Capone is.
That's right. I mean, unless they're all watching that that HBO, and that's for adults only. Eric Duran, geekinthecity.com, The Week in Geek. You gave us an overview of what you're going to be talking about today. Let's end on the movie sequel news. Let's finish with that one, because I think that's going to be the longest discussion. What else is going on in the world of nerdery, sir?
First off, happening locally here, Dan Hall said, I talk about the Grindhouse Film Festival a lot. But he's got a pretty cool event happening the weekend of January 28th and then the following weekend of February. It's going to be a 2-weekend-long Grindhouse Film Festival at the Northwest Film Center.
Yay!
That was a pause for you to continue. Yes, I'm sorry. So this is the Northwest Film Center. Is this the place on 23rd. Is this the place that's downtown?
It's where the museum is.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's
right.
The one. It's like at Southwest 12th and Park Avenue. They're going to be showing it at the Witzel Auditorium. So he's still going to keep doing the stuff at the Hollywood, but this kind of gives a a validation to, grindhouse cinema as a legitimate, art form, or at least a snapshot, into what cinema was like, in the 1970s and 80s, at least, a certain cross-section of cinema.
So they're going to be is he going to be showing the actual films, or is it going to be like a discussion of or a history of this?
I think he's going to do some discussions between the films, but yeah, he's going to be showing some classic kung fu films. Like I believe on the 28th he's going to be showing Avenging Eagle. On the 29th he's going to be showing Opium and the Kung Fu Master. And then the following weekend in February will be some classic Jackie Chan and Shaw Brothers kung fu films. So yeah, and there's going to be some discussions about how these movies have influenced other, cinema for the, following almost 30 years.
I always feel just so, out of my depth when anybody talks about Shaw Brothers films or kung fu movies or, the classic martial arts films, because that's, really, it's just something about which I have so little knowledge, relatively speaking. I mean, it's like I've seen, I guess, some of it, but it's like, but you get a guy like Siegfried who just knows, every single Shaw Brothers movie that has ever come out, there's this one. It's called Invisible Flying Crab Monster style Magic Vengeance, And it's about a guy, and it's like his hands are cut off, but then he fashions new hands out of coat hangers, and then it's like he's put in a monastery for 10 years, and it's like, and he'll have some copy of it at his house, and I've never even heard of it. And martial arts films are a thing. It's like they just came out, I think, with such they were so prolific, martial arts filmmakers at one point, that it's like it was just impossible, I think, to see them all. And so as a result, I have this huge gap in my knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, over in Hong Kong where these really started, yeah, they were doing one a week. It was like an imagined entire industry that had the Ed Wood style of filmmaking where they were doing 30 shots a day.
Wow.
Or you would just grab an actor from one set and say, okay, switch your wig around. You're going to play this character now. And okay,
awesome.
Off I went.
So when is this happening, this thing at the Northwest Film Center?
This starts Friday, January 28th at 9 p.m. at the Witzel Auditorium. And then it goes Friday and Saturday that weekend. And then the following weekend in February, the same location, the Witzel Auditorium.
Awesome. Excellent.
And you can find out more at grindhousefilmfest.com.
And then item number two, so of the three we've got here, item number two is at that time of year again, this isn't the Razzie Awards, right? Is this the nominations? What is the deal with the Razzies?
The Razzie nominations are coming up pretty soon because I think they announced the nominations about a week or so before the Oscars are announced.
Right.
But the big news is that the Razzies are adding the worst 3D movie to their selection of awards.
That's fantastic.
So I'm the smart money is on Clash of the Titans this year to probably just take that one away. The Clash of Titans might very well sweep the Razzies this year. So
Last Airbender. Which, by the way,
yeah.
which I have seen. I'm halfway through it at home right now, and here's the thing: is I can only watch it in 10-minute increments because it just hurts my eyes after a while. Because the thing about The Last Airbender, I'm not saying it's the worst movie ever made. I mean, it's bad, but it's something. Is this a thing about them doing the 3D in post or whatever, that it's muddy looking, it's dark and indistinct and fuzzy?
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. I mean, 3D, I mean, for me, the debate is still out whether or not 3D is going to be a viable, you know, form of filmmaking. But when they do it in post-production 3D, if they don't shoot it for 3D, it just looks like ass.
Yeah, I mean, it's just – it looks like when you're in one of those theaters – this is one of Ebert's complaints for years. You're in one of those theaters where the guy thinks he can save money by running the wrong size bulb in the projector. And so you're looking at the movie, and it's like it's just shot through a burlap sack. That's what The Last Airbender looks like, and that's what Clash of the Titans had, the same thing, where it was just – it just seemed dim and dingy looking, and I was like, well, is that the palette they're going for, or is that just like that it's crap 3D, and it's just that it's crap 3D?
Yeah, exactly. And really, the only way to enjoy the new Clash of Titans is to see it like as Dan Clark saw it, whereas he put together a 2-hour metal playlist and then just turned down the volume on the movie.
Just listen to nothing but like a winged Valkyrie ride off to Valhalla.
Yeah, man. You turn Clash of Titans into a 2-hour Dio video, and it's the greatest experience of your life.
Awesome.
So that's why I'm going to watch that movie.
You know, I can tell you, what was not a bad – well, there's two actually that looked good. Strangely enough, they're the low-budget ones. The Piranha 3D looked freaking fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, as bad a movie as it really was, Saw 7 – The Saw 3D movie. I mean, it's a terrible movie, but I actually thought the 3D aspect of it looked really good. Now, it's possible that that's because that entire series is like set in one green, dingy, underlit room to begin with. It's like one big,
yeah.
It's like a John Carmack game or something. The whole thing is just very, very dingy.
But both of those films, though, were shot from the outset for 3D as well. So.
Yeah, exactly. And surprisingly, the other movie this year, even though it was a horrible movie, but visually looked really good in 3D, was the new Resident Evil movie.
That's what I heard. I heard it looked fantastic.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was actually, after Avatar, that was the first movie shot using Cameron's actual camera equipment. So he went from, you know, the highest grossing film of all time to Resident Evil. So, I mean, what are you gonna do?
Well, I mean, you know, and it's like, you got to wonder, like, why, I mean, I guess maybe this late in the franchise, you got to find something that, you know, energize people. You got to get something to excite them, so.
Mila Jovovich's bony knees flying at your face.
Seriously. Hey, speaking of this late in the franchise, so let's talk about the third piece of geek news here, and then we'll have to, just FYI, we'll have to wrap it up in about 4 minutes. We got Eric Snyder calling in from a little place called Sundance. Let's talk about our good friends, the Wachowski brothers.
The Wachowski brothers, and this was a story broke by Keanu Reeves, but the Wachowskis have all but confirmed it. They want to do Matrix 4 and 5, by the way, in 3D.
Yeah.
Of course, because, I mean, that really is the natural progression of bullet time anyway, is to have it coming at your face. But they believe there is more stories to tell with Neo and Zion and Fat Lawrence Fishburne, I guess. I have no idea, but... they are reportedly working on Matrix 4 and 5.
And see, here's the thing. When I say, yeah, it's like I just feel like they've ruined the franchise anyway, so they might as well just – if you're going to hit the wall, you hit it full speed. You just steer into the skid and just – like if you're going to roll the car, you see how far you can get with it. Get some real distance on that roll.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. The two Matrix sequels were – I mean they were so bad they made us forget how awful the Star Wars –
Did you lose Aaron Duran?
No, I'm sorry. Hold on a second. Hold on, just one second here. This is I've made a huge mistake. All right, Eric Snyder.
Stop touching things.
Putting Eric Snyder on hold. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Aaron. That was my fault. The system auto held you there because I was putting Eric Snyder on hold. So my apologies.
I don't remember where we were.
All right, that's good.
Matrix 4 and 5. Horrible, horrible idea. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they make up so we can experience the train wreck that will be those films.
And by the way, how just terrible and sad that Keanu Reeves was actually breaking a news story, you know, or like revealing something. I mean, it's not really like the glory days of Hedda Hopper or anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to get a devil's advocate too, so he's really got, I mean... I almost would rather see a Bill and Ted's 3 than a Matrix 4, to be honest.
He's got to do something.
I want to ask you one thing before we got off, and I might be ridiculous to open this can of worms right now, but I did want to ask you while we had you. Your thoughts on the announcement that David E. Kelly has been greenlit for his Wonder Woman TV series.
Is that true? Has that actually been confirmed?
Yes. Even though 2 weeks ago they said that everyone was passing on at NBC... had a last-minute change of heart. They are now going to pick up David E. Kelly's Wonder Woman series, where by day she is a corporate powerhouse and at night fights crime. The thing is that I haven't liked anything David E. Kelly's done since Picket Fences. So the idea of him handling, you know, any kind of superhero especially an iconic female superhero just sounds awful.
No. Don't forget a quirky, whimsical, iconic female superhero now.
Yeah.
That's how you have to put that.
Yeah, good.
And who will undoubtedly, undoubtedly be so thin her legs will look like pixie sticks.
The series will last until she slips into subatomic space.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We should
there's the thing is, like, I am so nonplussed by pretty much anything David E. Kelly does. It's like, okay, are you going to turn this into The Practice, or is it going to be Boston Legal with Wonder Woman? I don't care.
Ally McBeal. That's all it's going to be a way for him to retread the Ally McBeal thing, because Ally McBeal, I know this sounds like heresy, was in many ways, it was similar to Buffy the Vampire Slayer in sort of that it had the by turns, you know, independent and flighty sort of whimsical character who, you know, was poignant every now and again, and then something, you know, then something sad would play.
This one would be totally different because she's a brunette this time.
Yeah, he really has the one tone to all of his shows. I mean, he does. Yeah. He's a little Kevin Smithian in that way. It's just like David E. Kelly with a thesaurus.
Yeah, he has a new series now that is Lawyers, and it's Kathy Bates playing the William Shatner role.
Of course.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Aaron Duran, ladies and gentlemen, from GeekInTheCity.com. Find out more at GeekInTheCity.com about all things geektastic. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
All right, there you go. That is Aaron Duran. Let's see. What have I done here? There we go. Couldn't quite figure it out how to hang up there. All right, in just like 10 seconds, we'll be welcomed by Mr. Eric D. Snyder, who is live at the Sundance Film Festival at Park City, Utah. Don't forget, coming up later on today, we got your Cheney watch coming up, also your snuff watch. Let's see if we can, without further ado, so welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. I hope this works correctly. He is at the Sundance Film Festival in Park City. Mr. Eric D. Snyder from Movie BS with Baron Snyder, Fridays at Cascadia.fm. Hello, Eric. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you?
We are fantastic. So if at some point if the phone should prove a little sketchy, because I know in Park City reception can be a hit and miss proposition, we'll ring you back. But you are at Sundance. When did you get there?
I got here last Thursday evening.
And so you have you are there for how long?
I'll be here all through the whole week. This is my fourth full day. This is the day where everybody hits the wall.
Oh,
where everybody gets tired of watching movies and it gets tired of everything. So I feel like a bunch of big babies.
So how many movies have you seen to date?
Let's see. I've seen, I think, 13.
You've seen 13, so that's 13 movies in Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But so going into the day, it's now 3:15 there. So that is, you are averaging 3.5 movies a day. Well done, sir.
Yeah, something like that. And I'm a slacker compared to some. There are some who do 4 or 5 every day.
Do the movies screen around the clock? Is it literally like it's 24 hours a day, there's something going somewhere, or does it stop?
Not quite. The first ones are like 8:30 in the morning, and then the last ones are at midnight.
So,
I'm sorry.
You
could theoretically see movies. You could like mathematically, you could probably see 7 movies in a day if you wanted to.
Is it difficult
to advisable?
Is it difficult to figure out exactly? It almost seems like you need a spreadsheet or some Sundance app or something where you plug in all the movies you want to see, and then it tells you like what the best combination of times, like when you need to be wherever. Because it seems like you would just constantly be sprinting from one place to another.
Well, and you know what? There actually is a site that does exactly that. It's called, what is it called now? B-Side. And they link up with all the big film festivals, including Sundance. And that's exactly what you do. You go in and you tell the movies you want to see, and it works out your schedule for you. It shows you where there are conflicts and what you have to do instead and all that. For Sundance, we have press screenings. And those are in three venues. And it's easiest. Like, with my press badge, I can get into the public screenings, but it's a hassle. You got to request a ticket, and you have to wait in line with the common people, you know. So I try to stick to the press screenings because they're easier. That way the schedule is a little bit laid out for you.
Of the movies that you're going to see, if you have a press pass, if you're going to a press screening, do you still have to? If you're going to Sundance, but you're a critic, you are part of the press, do you still have to pick your stuff in advance, or can you just decide in the spur of the moment, like, I guess I'll see that?
No, you can be pretty spontaneous. The only factor there is if the screen is going to be full. You can't always saunter into the last minute, but in general, yeah, you don't have to schedule it. You can just kind of make decisions on the spur of the moment if you need to.
What have you?
Sometimes I think discover movies you never would have seen before. It's like, you know, this one was full, so I'll go see this thing. I don't even know what it is, but I'll see it just because it's there, and it winds up being, you know, some little gem that you wouldn't have thought of.
What have you? If you can, I don't know to what extent this is embargoed, or you can talk about any of this stuff. But I mean, have you seen anything yet that really stood out?
Yeah, nothing's embargoed. No one can silence me, Rick Emerson.
Excellent.
I will speak my mind.
The people must know.
Exactly. I'll tell you what's a really good film I really like called Silent House. It's a horror film. And it's basically, you know, one of your spooky house kind of films. The gimmick is that it's all shot in one take, 90-minute take.
Wow. And is it dummied to look like one take, or is it actually one take?
No, they cheated. I spotted at least two places where they definitely cheated, but the effect is intended to look like one long shot. And so it's very well done and pretty dang creepy anyway.
So it's kind of got that kind of like the Alfred Hitchcock rope thing, where if you did not know better. You would think you were watching almost horror movies.
Right.
So this is from the same people who did Open Water too.
Oh, really?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yes, indeed.
I got to tell you, Open Water was a film that Roger Ebert put it best, actually, in my opinion, about Open Water. He said that after seeing Open Water, he said, I had to go walk around outside in the sunshine to try to lift my mood, but it didn't work. Open Water was a film that I actually felt like I felt like something inside me had just died a little bit. It was probably never going to be well again. So, and it's a well done film.
And this is also the one. Isn't this the one starring the third Olsen sister?
Yes.
Okay.
Elizabeth Olsen. She's the younger sister of Mary Kate and Ashley Olsen. She's actually she's the star of two movies here at Sundance. The other one is called, what is it called? It's, this is the joke. None of us can say the name. It's like Martha Mary Maybelline something, where she plays the young woman who has escaped from a religious cult. And she's kind of the star of Sundance this year. She's the star of those two movies that have both been very well received. Martha Marcy May Marlene, which was just today picked up by Fox Searchlight, so that movie will appear in theaters at some point. And the villain, the religious cult leader, is that one guy, that John Hawks, you know who I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's the creepy religious, the cult leader.
From Social Network, right?
Oh, yeah, okay, I know who that is. So let me...
He wasn't
in Inception.
Who am I thinking of, then?
Who am I thinking of?
John Hawks, he was in Deadwood, and he was in Winter's Bone.
Winter's Bone, that's right.
Yeah, Winter's Bone.
I'm thinking of the guy I'm thinking of the guy that was the dean at Harvard, who was has some name similar.
Let me
ask you this. I'll just cut ahead a little bit in line here, because you mentioned a horror movie, you mentioned religious cult, you mentioned a movie being picked up, and all three of those elements sort of conflate in a story that I read last night about the new Kevin Smith film Red State. And so, because whatever anybody thinks about Kevin Smith, that guy is he never met a publicity or marketing gimmick that he could not just ring to maximum. Effect in terms of gaining himself exposure. So the deal is...
He's a showman.
Yeah, he is saying now, and who knows if he actually follows through, but he is saying now that the thing for Red State is that any bidding or auctioning on the film has to happen live in the theater at the screening.
Well, that was the case. And the update, the screening, the premiere was last night.
Okay.
And there wasn't a press screening. It was just a public screening because, you know, he doesn't like movie critics now. It was too hard to get a ticket to go to the public screen, so I didn't do it. But the reports there were that he showed the movie, and then he was going to auction it off there live, you know, after the screening.
Right.
And so there were representatives from all the various studios there. And it turned out what he did was he sold the movie to himself for $20. He's going to distribute it himself.
And yet, and the great thing about that is that, like, everywhere I went last night, like, reading entertainment news, like, it was, like, one of the top two or three headlines. And then, of course, he just horked everybody once again. Well done,
Kevin. Yeah, and then there was then there was a press release sent out this morning giving the actual tour dates of where Kevin Smith plans to bring the movie. So he already had the tour of the movie in place, already planned that he was going to do it anyway.
Yeah, it was a big gimmick, his whole coming... Auction off the film live was all a big hoax. It was just to get attention. And so now people are mad at him because he sort of was, you know, he wasted a lot of people's time, but nothing else.
Who says that William Castle is dead? Or P.T. Barnum, for that matter. Well done.
Exactly.
Is there anything – I know you're probably on a tight schedule here today. Just real quickly before you go, we're talking to Eric D. Snyder. He's at Sundance Film Festival, Park City, Utah. Is there anything you are seeing today or maybe the next 24 hours or so that you are especially excited to see, something that you've been really looking forward to?
There's one I'm seeing tonight called The Woman, and it's written by Lucky McKee. It's a horror film called May about 6 years ago.
Yeah, May. May is wonderful.
And it's what?
Yeah.
So what is the woman about? What's the premise?
The woman is, I don't know much about it except that it's a horror film, and it had its world premiere last night, a public screening at midnight last night. And apparently at the screening there was trouble. Like, people were outraged and offended by the film and were making a fuss.
Awesome.
It turned into a big brouhaha.
Oh, that's
so
a
the
good
press screening tonight is going to be very full of people wanting to see what the fuss is all about.
Is there more horror movies playing this year than typically, or are we just hearing about them more?
Probably just hearing about them more. There's always probably 7 or 8 out of 100 that are what you call horror movies. So they're always pretty well represented. You know, some years are better than others, but there's about the same number.
So I know you got to stick to a schedule. So thank you for making some time for carving out a few minutes to speak with us. We will angle to talk to you at some point around the same time tomorrow, Tuesday.
Okay, yeah, we can try to do that.
Awesome. All right. Well, my people will talk to your people. We'll talk.
Excellent.
We'll figure it out.
Hi, Eric. I miss you.
Hi, Dawn. I miss you, too. Is Rick being nice to you?
He is.
That's not true.
As much as he can
Don't
be.
Don't you spread that rumor. You ruin my street cred, woman. All right. Eric D. Snyder, ladies and gentlemen. EricDSnyder.com, film.com, Cinematical, and Movie BS with Baron Snyder, which is Fridays, 11 a.m. to noon on Cascadia.fm. All right. Enjoy your day, my friend. We will talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right, there you go. That is Eric Snyder, ladies and gentlemen. This is... This is like a thing I got at the last moment. This is my hooray for Hollywood. But I think it's played all in minor keys, and so it's terrifying.
Yeah, it's very scary.
Gonna eat your soul. I'll pull out all of your bones right through your skin. Anyway.
I'm very excited about a new Lucky McKee movie.
And okay, now, we were having a little sketchiness with the phone there, so I didn't want to press him on it. But what is Lucky McKee?
Lucky McKee's a director, directed a film called May, starring an actress named Angela Bettis, which is one of the most amazing and delightful horror movies that you'll ever see.
You don't hear a delightful in horror movie used
just,
in the same
sentence. Those of us who love May love it with... I know a few people that feel like I do, where you just say May. In fact, we were talking about underseen horror movies when I had Dave Helfrey on Ham-Fisted Radio. And one of those things where I was like, what about May? And we were all like, ooh, May.
I don't think I've heard of that.
It's about a girl who works at a veterinarian's office.
Okay.
And... decides that she it's a hard movie to describe. It falls into that category of feel that I'm going to make myself a special friend from the parts of other people. One of those
I
kinds
see.
Of movies.
Okay.
But it's also falls into that like shy, creepy person who everyone underestimates, and then they do like horrible, horrible things. Lucky McKee also directed a really great episode of the Masters of Horror anthology called Sick Girl, also starring Angela Bettis, about a shy young woman who enters a lesbian affair, and both the women basically get terrorized by this giant bug. So you have lesbians and giant bugs eating them, and it's like Lucky McKee is awesome.
All right, then. Well.
But yes, but I highly recommend if you like creepy horror movies, go check out May, because it is such a good movie.
Here's the thing about your recommendations, though, and especially your recommendations of horror films, is that like all of your horror film recommendations, all of those movies are like they're like made to wound, like in this deep psychic, horrible sort of way.
I like movies that are genuinely disturbing and frightening, not just movies that like, boo, stuff jumped out at me, now I'm going to giggle. You know, I like things that really, really have got some...
I don't disagree. No, this is a thing that you and I are on the same page.
And
I'm just saying...
May is much more accessible than
The
Dead Girl, which I still regret that I actually gave that a recommendation on mainstream radio.
Are you still hearing from people who loathe you because of that?
Occasionally,
because you can put me firmly in that camp, by the way.
I will occasionally get the Facebook messenger that, God damn you for making me watch that movie. I was like, I didn't make you watch. I told you what it was about.
Let me just say this about Dead Girl, which, by the way, in case anybody really, like, in case you haven't been creeped out in a while or you're able to eat, or maybe if you go 5 or 10 minutes at a stretch without just, like, feeling ill or wishing that you were dead, you can fix all of that by watching a movie called Dead Girl, which Dawn recommended to me. And I won't even say what it's about. I won't give any – because here's the thing. And I'm not trying to be that guy. But the reason I will not even give a tiny synopsis of it – and I mean you can go online and look it up if you want to. The reason I will not even give a minuscule overview of Dead Girl is that – giving the sort of high concept, the thumbnail description of Dead Girl, on the one hand, you know, it does tell you exactly what it's about. On the other hand, so you get a good idea of what the movie's like just by reading the description. Oh, it's about two blanks who discover a blank, and then they blank the blank with the blank. And you go, oh, that's what it's about. And yet at the same time, it's like you cannot possibly imagine what the movie is like. I mean, it's really – I will say this. I will say that Dead Girl – and I'm trying to think of what else would go into this category. Dead Girl is one of the best-made films that I don't ever, ever, ever want to see again. Ever, not ever, ever, ever. I think Open Water probably falls into that category, by the way. I remember Open Water was a fantastic movie. I don't ever want to see that again. It's bad enough that that movie is in my head once and just sort of circling around, you know, in the muddy water of my subconscious, terrifying me every now and again. They're really disturbing movies that I can watch over and over, you know, from the very mainstream, like your Silence of the Lambs or whatever, to your, you know, like when I met Laura, she had never... You'll appreciate this. When I met Laura, you know, and we, you know, this is a thing that couples do, the whole indoctrination phase of like, you know, I will give you all my records. Then you'll give me your records. Then we'll, you know, you'll pick a movie and I'll pick a movie. And so, you know, the tale has been told many times, but I started off, you know, really on either the right or the wrong foot, because I figured like right out of the gate, I wanted to figure if we were going to be able to stick together. So the first date we ever went on was to In the Company of Men, which had just left Sundance and had just started playing in downtown Salt Lake. And in my own defense, I didn't really know what it was about. Like, as such, I sort of had, again, a generalized sort of thumbnail of the plot. But I just heard it's like when Snyder was talking about this new movie, the woman being divisive, and the people were that you will never get me into a movie faster than to say that it is two things. One, I don't even like the movie. The word controversial doesn't really work on me. You know what two adjectives will get me to see a movie? Divisive. And even better than that, polarizing. Mm-hmm. If a movie is polarizing, I am there, because it's like there's because that means that there's something about the film that is really fundamentally intellectually stimulating if you can come down on either side of it very firmly, as you can in, you know, like in The Company of Men, or probably a better example was Do the Right Thing. I remember, you know, hearing about Do the Right Thing for, and this is, you know, before, you know, you really you just, you know, I think it played, I guess, at Sundance, but it was before Sundance had really, you know, to my little burg anyway, had hit the mainstream, and I had to wait forever because I don't think it played anywhere in my hometown, and I had to get it on video or whatever, and it was like you just heard about it, and you heard about, like, you know, they're afraid to show it in certain neighborhoods because there'll be violence, and not unlike Colors with Robert Duvall. Mm, yes. But I remember then seeing Do the Right Thing, and I'd just been so hyped up for it because it was such a polarizing movie. But so, you know, Laura and I were going back and forth about, like, but after In the Company of Men, she demanded, I think, that she pick the next three films because she felt like that was like an industrial strength film that I made her go see.
Yeah, I can see that.
And but we had we talked about what kind of movies she liked and I liked, and, you know, she likes, you know, she was going through this whole everybody goes through filmic phases, I suppose. I guess I was going through a phase where every movie I watched right about that time of my life, I mean, I'm not going to make myself more interesting sounding than I really was. Everything I watched at that point was just a variation on, like, Swingers or Clerks. It was just like a bunch of dirtbag guys sitting around a room going, what's up with bitches, man? What is, you know, I got what they need. Why don't they want it? You know, and then a guy goes like, Ewok, you know, and then and then there's like some ironic rap song that plays over the end, and then we all go home and have tacos. So that was every movie I watched. Everything she watched was sort of like, have you seen Go Fish?
Yes.
Then you've seen every movie that my then girlfriend, now wife, was watching at that point. It was like a bunch of movies.
So just like indie lesbian movies?
Yeah, or indie and lesbian movies, or just like, you know, like a bunch of low budget, you know, like indie, which a lot of times just means like the acting is bad and it's in black and white.
Black and white and everybody's just sitting around talking to each other about things.
And drinking a lot of tea,
yeah,
you know, and then occasionally having like really like awkward discussions about the female genitalia, which I think is supposed to be empowering. Mm. I will say this, to her credit, she introduced me within the first month, and I'm being a little snarky there because I actually did quite like Go Fish. I thought that was that and a movie called Fun she introduced me to, and I loved both of those. She also had me watch something I had never seen. She had me watch Fried Green Tomatoes, which I had not, and as my friend Brandon once said, if they had just pitched it as Cannibals and Lesbians, That would have been like box office gold. Because I was like, fried green tomatoes. You know, I got your fried green tomato. And I just, I never, you know, I didn't go. It was a great movie.
Yeah, it's a wonderful movie.
But we got on the subject of horror films. And I swear to God, we'll take a break here in a second because no one has been able to use the bathroom. We got onto the subject of horror films at one point, and I was like, "Oh, I'm a huge horror fan." Like, you know, I got, you know, I went on and on as I'm wont to do about, you know, just what makes a good horror film and some of the great horror films in the American film canon, and I asked her if she liked, I said, you know, well, do you like scary movies? And she said, "Yes, I really do." And I said, "Such as?" And please don't think less of her because she has come around. She's gotten a lot better since this point in her life. But at that, she referenced Scream as being a really, really frightening movie that that she barely made it through because it was so terribly unnerving. Now, she's from Provo.
Yeah.
And people in Provo, you know, they're a simple folk. I mean, they just know it's like you lift the barn, you churn the butter, you have some potatoes, repeat, and that's it. That's your whole life. And so she didn't, they, you know, what are you going to do? There's no video stores there. And the only video store they had in Provo was that Clean Flicks place where they were like editing out the sex and violence.
God.
So it's like, what are you going to, you know, no HBO because that's the devil's channel. So it's like, what really, what was her choice? What was she going to do? So, so I decided to have her jump right into the deep. Let me ask you this. If you meet somebody and they're like, I like scary movies, like that Scream, boy, though, put a strain on my ticker. And then you, if you had this idea, if you're like, you know what, I'm going to show you a real horror movie, what would it be?
Like something that I just really want them to understand, like the whole combination of suspense and real gut-clenching terror.
Yeah, if you wanted them to be truly frightened watching a movie and you know, and leaving out like weird Cronenberg kind of fright.
Well, I might do John Carpenter's The Thing.
There you go. See, that's a good I would also accept the original Halloween if you hadn't seen it because
yeah.
That's a—
Well, if you want to go strictly like mainstream horror, then yeah, the original Halloween is good. The first of Nightmare on Elm Street,
yes.
Which is you know, the rest of the franchise is pretty much crap, but that first one is really scary.
Great premise, great great little hook. I decided just to go straight for the straight for the sawed-off shotgun. I went for Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, yeah. See, that's
the original.
That's traumatizing.
Yes.
That would just be traumatizing bringing somebody from. I thought Scream was really scary. Well, now we're going to watch Texas Chainsaw
Massacre. And for me, it's like there is a little bit of like a. I don't want to say that it's like machismo. It's not really that because it's not like a guy thing or like you know. Listen, little lady, I'll show you. You women, you always pick the wrong movies. Let me pick something. It wasn't that.
No.
It was not really like a guy thing so much as it was like a, you know, I didn't want to say like a geek thing, but it was like, you know, I love movies and I'm not an expert by any means, but it was like a film lover sort of swaggering kind of like, I'll show you what a real horror movie is.
But you
is
also
like.
Run the risk of having her just not trust you to pick a horror movie ever again, because that's just like, because that's too, that does just a lot. That movie is a lot.
It is.
And I
told her and I said, like, look, like, do you really want to be scared? And, you know, and I actually said, you know, look, I gave her the straight dope on it. I said, look, really, honestly, you have to take my word for it when I say it's really, in terms of what you see on screen, it is not graphically violent. There is almost no depicted bloodshed. There is, I think, there is almost no actual depicted violence. It all is implied or it's off screen. And I said, but it's, I said, but they're not effing around. Like, you have to understand, like, the movie was made by bad, untrustworthy people. And I did, I think I did really have, it was, I, it was sort of that, you know, it was a little bit of that, it was a little bit of that Jack Dawson, like, do you want to go to a real party kind of a thing? except instead of Celtic Storm, it was Gunnar Hansen and Tobe Hooper. And so I had the DVD, I think it had just come out, like a special edition of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I said, last chance. And I had a whole, and I'm very Woody Allen about it, where I'm like, turn off the phone. We're not answering the door. I'm turning off all the lights. You know, I'm going to position the speakers just so. And you really get an appreciation for a movie like that when you watch it through the eyes of someone who has never, A, seen it, and B, had really, again, viewed like Scream as the epitome of what it meant to see an American horror film. Because the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a very American horror film in some ways. It is very – it has a sort of great, gritty kind of bootstrap sort of outlaw feel to it. And in a way that just – it has not lost an ounce of it. And she pointed out something that had never really occurred to me. I guess I was aware of it but never really thought about it. Is that Marilyn Burns, who plays Sally, she's the female lead in the film. Lara actually pointed out that she is in peril for like 52 straight minutes or something. That it's like once everybody else is sort of killed off, that it is like nearly an hour of her screaming and running from some hillbillies with chainsaws. And, you know, and that like that wears on you.
Yeah, I got my only problem with that movie, actually, is that I just got so tired of her screaming.
Yeah.
You know, there's a point at which I wish they would have had her change up her reactions just a little bit.
Modulate it a little bit.
But the one scene that there's so much in that movie that is scarring. But the thing that stayed with me forever for some reason is that whole set piece where they have Grandpa come down and there's the bucket and he's got the thing and he can't hold the mallet.
Yeah.
So they keep picking it up and putting it in his hand. Dear God.
And it's just you ask yourself, like, who would make this? Like, what kind of people are these?
Yeah.
And
it's the same if you've ever seen the original version of The Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah.
That movie
it's relentless.
Is so relentlessly just vicious.
Yeah.
And it's sickly vicious.
It's visceral.
You know, to the point where and where you do walk and think, wow, how did you go back to your motel in the evening and sleep at night after a day's work on that?
I just, you know, it is one of those things where some of those movies, and don't you get the feeling, too, that now we're just nerding out, but that's fine. There's no one here to tell us no.
Yeah.
Don't you get the feeling sometimes with guys like that, you know, with like your Wes Craven and your Tobe Hooper, that it's like they don't even really know how they stumbled into making such a mess. Because it's like Tobe Hooper, not like he's been hitting them out of the park since Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I mean, he, quote, directed Poltergeist, but I mean, you know.
Yeah, but I think I think an awful lot of directors, too. You see a lot of failure with directors, even non-horror directors, that start out on low-budget features. And they're working so hard to squeeze as much creativity out of the small amount of money they have to work with. And it's like then they are given carte blanche to do, you know, bigger projects.
Right.
They're given more and more money. And it's almost like, you know, now they're, I don't know if it's a matter of they start overthinking it. They're trying to figure out what it was that they did before that
worked.
Instead
of just doing it.
Or it's just a matter of they worked extra hard because they had less to work with.
Right.
I don't know. But it happens. It happens a lot.
And it's always – here's the other thing about that is it's the later movies with the bigger budgets that always date really badly. I mean, another perfect example of this, George Romero, who – you know, makes Night of the Living Dead, which obviously it's dated in the sense that you can tell when it was filmed, but it hasn't aged badly. Whereas I know that I am really I'm minority here, but you know, like Dawn of the Dead, like Romero's, I don't like Romero's Dawn of the Dead. I just don't. It feels cheesy and corny, and he can say it's a satire and a parody and whatever, but it just doesn't really work for me. You know, and Day of the Dead is a little hit or miss, and it's just like none of them ever had that punch of the first one. And it's not like he hasn't made good movies since then, because he has. You know, he's made other films that were decent. He made Creepshow, which I like a lot. You know, so it's like he is, you know, he has made things since then that were good. But it's like that first zombie film was the only one that really had. And it was like this. It is like a sort of, it is like a raw, sort of like a guttural kind of horror, you know, that it does. There's no filter on it. It is just, it seems very unpolished.
Well, also the way that it's shot, which, you know, is a result of a very low budget.
Yeah.
But that bleached out black and white, it ends up, to me, it has the feel of an actual nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, that it's almost like what a nightmare looks like in your own head when you're asleep.
That was my thing with Texas Chainsaw Massacre. When they get it does seem like you have gone into your own head after you've had like way too many Mai Tais and and a bunch of bad pork, and you're just sort of going in your bed late at night, because it's like the whole thing of like. The thing about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, there's actually on the super hella ultimate DVD edition or whatever, the two disc one that I have, is that there's actually, it's so creepy to watch. I've always wanted to have a Halloween party at my house just so I could have this on in the background. It is just, there's this weird score that they use over the opening credits of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and it just sounds like a guy hitting a bunch of pots and pans in an echo chamber really loudly and distortedly, where it's just like a lot of like gong, bang, gong, gang, you know, and just like over, and it's so loud that it's distorted, and then it echoes, it reverberates almost endlessly, and it becomes very like surreal. But there's this 25-minute bonus. I don't know who would want this, but it is just that score playing for 25 minutes, And it is just the crew, like somebody took a Super 8 camera between takes and just went through, and there's nobody in this. It's just there are no people around. So somebody, the crew went through with a Super 8 camera, and they just filmed the various sets and the set pieces, and the, you know, they got good shots of all the production design. And so it's all handheld and like weaves in and out, and it goes in and out of focus. And so it's just like that weird couch made out of bones. You know, and yeah. just like the rocking chair with like the skull cap on top, and then and the image from, and then it's just set to this weird like gong, you know, for like 25 minutes. The scene in that movie that the one thing about Texas Chainsaw Massacre that weirds me out always has is it's when what's her name, the one of the girls, not Sally, but one of the other chicks, gets, she's like, she's running in to find her boyfriend who's been like malleted or something. And she trips and she falls into the living room and she hits the floor and like this whole spray of chicken feathers goes up and there's like dust and chicken feathers and bones and like turtle shells hanging from twine and just all kinds of like bizarre. But then it's like you look and there's a full grown chicken in a canary cage, living chicken going rawr, 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 rawr. And it's just, it's a huge full grown chicken stuffed into a canary cage. And it's like that is like the single most disturbing image, because it's, you know what that is? That's like a almost got it right, but not quite. So it's somebody who has kind of a vague idea of how humans behave, but isn't quite getting it in the whole. And that's, yeah, the movie just weirds me out. So anyway, so that was the first horror movie I had my wife see. The end. God damn, it's 2:45.
Yeah.
This is an irresponsible use of technology, Don.
It is.
All right. Well, we should take a break here. We'll do this. We'll come back. We got your snuff watch, Chaney watch. We'll do your first clue this week for E.H. Vending's Name That Snack and so forth. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere. We are back after this.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Was a moonlight mishap? You lost your party hat. Seems your lifestyle ain't so worthwhile after all. A heavy-hearted taxi ride and a walk on a wild side. Did your guardian angel let you down? Gonna lay low and play it straight. It's time to rejuvenate. Gonna kickstart your heart to come around. I can tell you now, you've really gotten the blues. I can tell you now that I've walked in your shoes. Give me the sweet lowdown. You better get out the way. It's history made the heart.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Get the rocks in the box. Get the water right down to your socks. This bulkhead's built of fallen brethren bones. We all do what we can. We endure our fellow man. And we sing our songs to the head frames, kicks and moans. And it's one, two, three on the wrong side of the lee. What were you meant for? What were you meant for? And it's 7, 8, 9, you get your shuffle back in line. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. And you won't make a dime on this gray granite mountain mine. Of dirt you're made, and the dirt you will return. So while we're living here, let's get this little one thing clear. There's plenty of men to die, you don't jump your turn. And it's 1, 2, 3 on the wrong side of the lead. What were you meant for? What were you meant for? And it's 7, 8, 9, you get your shuffle back in line. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. Make it to 10, you won't make it again. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
All right, well, now it's like this bed is just coming up to screw with me. I was like, I have to forcibly change it to something else. The love of God.
Hold on. I'm
tired of this stereotypically Asian music. Let's see if I can find the... There we go. Stereotypically Hawaiian music instead. This is, by the way, this is Hawaiian wedding song. This is not Lenny D. This is Mr. Bob Ralston, pianist for the Lawrence Welk program. This now sounds like this would be the accompanying score to some sort of strange Cronenberg-esque kind of horror trailer.
It sounds like something you'd play like at a funeral while people were like walking in.
You know what this sounds like a little bit? This, or while you're on hold, sort of a Pleasant Grove thanks you for holding and gives you condolences in this time of loss. Have you ever gone to the Forever Hollywood Cemetery?
No.
Really? You lived in L.A. How'd you?
I know I did. No, I never did that.
Oh, you got to go there because they've got that's where Jane Mansfield is buried.
I used to live in Hollywood, and I used to see the Graveline Tours hearse go by a lot, but I never actually ended up getting around to taking the tour.
Let's see if I've got any other drastic reductions of various world musics by an organist.
Wait.
Let's see what Tico Tico sounds like. Hey, this is Jaunty.
It is.
Call Art Bell on the wild card line. East of the Rockies. 1-800-742-BELL. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for, You know what this sounds like? This sounds like it would be the music. I gotta quit doing this, but this sounds like it would be the music that is underneath one of those weird Gumby shorts that shows up on Mystery Science Theater 3000 every now and again.
This is like one of those pieces of music that I would just start dancing around my house frenetically to, and Patrick would worry that there was something wrong with me.
Like in the sort of alternate version of your head where you guys are starting in sort of like a Keystone Cops video.
Yeah.
In any event, the Rick Emerson Radio program brought to you today by Squires Electric. If you want to find out more about them, you can do so by going to SquiresElectric.com. That is, it's really, the music has got a lot of gusto, doesn't it? There's a lot of pep here. It's SquiresElectric.com. It's like music to take Benzedrine by. You can call them if you want. It's 503-252-1609.
We still going to do that top five where it's songs that sound like cocaine feels? Because I have dibs on this one.
I think it's now a top four. 503-252-1609. And if it's electrical... Okay, I got to change this. If it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring of any kind in your home or business, you can find out more about how to get it taken care of right and how to get it taken care of the first time by talking to the folks at Squires Electric. Because, you know, and especially you think of restaurants when it comes to this, but, you know, any place where you have wiring, you have something that has to be done correctly because the city's going to come through and they're going to... The man looks askant at things that are done improperly, and a job worth doing is worth doing well. So if you lack, you know, either the knowledge, the time, or you just, you know, just too much hassle to try to get it all taken care of yourself, especially if you're going to be starting a brand new business, you're going to be moving into a new facility, or if you're building a house, or if you're, you know, you kind of be moving into a facility that we used for something else beforehand, you don't want to screw with all that because you got enough on your plate and you want to make sure that it's turned over to professionals so that it's one less thing you have to worry about, really. And that is really what it comes down to. You dial 10 numbers. It's 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. And then you're not going to have to worry about it from that point on. You're going to know that the job is being done by people who know how to do it properly. And they know how to do it properly the first time so that when the inspector comes through or when the business starts or when you move into the house, everything is going to work exactly as it should. Because ideally, are you doing like a row your boat thing over there?
I feel like I should be ice skating now.
How about this? We'll get a little, I believe this is just called Row, Row, Row. What was I saying? Well, ideally, you know, the electrical system in your home and your business is, it is like your own circulatory system, kids. Really, you shouldn't even know it's there. And when you start noticing it, it's because something is going wrong, and then you're just seeing dead relatives. So try to avoid that. 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. They are electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. They are licensed, bonded, and insured. They are good folk, and they are proud sponsors of the Rick Emerson radio program. And as we sometimes say, good enough to wire the studios of the Emerson News Network, which they did, and they are good enough for your home or your business. 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. Squires Electric.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
All right, then. I feel, I don't know, positively vibrational from that pastiche of music.
Yeesh.
All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. I don't even know that I have time to talk about I have to talk about it now, just real briefly, only because this is one of those things that if I try to bring it up tomorrow... Like, sometimes I'll do this. Like, if something interesting or amusing or just, you know, perverse or weird or whatever happened, and then it's like if I don't get a chance to bring it up that day, occasionally, this is another tale, by the way, that I can't really act. Sometimes I'll be like, well, I'll just talk about it the next day. And then it's like, you know, and even if I'm not framing it as a thing I did that morning, even if it's like, you know what I did 2 days ago, Dawn? And then it's just, you know, it just lacks some panache. So I'll tell you this. You and I were talking about our sleep schedules because you're on this... This Olestra or whatever. What is it called?
Vistaril.
Vistaril, which was marketed as...
When I was a kid, it was sold as Atarax.
Atarax. So you are on this sort of strange thing where you're falling asleep in fits and starts for like 3 or 4 or 5 hours of really, really, really peaceful sleep. And then do you wake up all at once, or is it like a gradual emerging from the sleep?
I wake up like a normal person. I get up in the morning and go, I'm awake now. Oh, it's time to get up. And I get up and I have coffee and everything's fine. And then like 3 hours later or something, I've like eaten food. And then honest to God, as soon as the food hits my system, it's something like...
And they didn't give you a warning, like, do not, is it in fact the opposite? It's like, take with food and liquid.
I don't know. It's so unlike anything that has ever happened to me with any drug I've ever taken that now I have to go back and seek it out and say, does this happen to other people or am I just crazy?
Now, again, I'm not trying to imply anything untoward about you, but now are you taking it? Are you following the recommended dosage?
I am indeed.
So you're not taking it like too often or, you know, like, well, I missed mine yesterday. I'll take three today.
No, it's like, take half to two tablets at bedtime, and both times I took one.
Half to two is sort of a wide variance.
Well, what she told me is that if it's in the evening and I have the itchiness, I can take a half a one and see if that stops the itchiness. And then later, when it's time to go to bed, if I want, I could take a full one then, you know. That's why she said half.
Let me just say, in the realm of products that when taken at bedtime relieve the itchiness, this really is on the this is on the far side of good here.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, in any event. Well, this is like with the Ativan, where it says, like, if you look at the front, it actually says something like, take one. This is the thing that I don't get. It's like the trazodone, when you hear about people who are taking, like, you know, 500 milligrams or something at a time because it's like an antidepressant. And I guess you wouldn't be, I mean, if you can't even move, I guess you can't get into too much trouble or whatever.
Well, that's the same thing with this, is I think I'm taking the one pill, I think, is 25 milligrams. And for people who have, like, serious, like, severe anxiety disorder and are having stuff, they'll give them up to 200 milligrams.
It's insane.
Of this stuff. And I had like 125 milligram thing and I was like, and I'm going to sleep now.
That's the thing with the Ativan. It'll say I take half of the, and it's like they give me, I think they're like 0.25s or something. And I will take half of one of those and it's like I'm good. Like if I get the weird panic attack or the, you know, whatever, it's like I'll take half. And it actually says in the front, like, take half to one and a half, three times daily as needed, which is... Which is what? That's half to one. That's four and a half of those. I mean, which is, you know, that is what, 400% of what I normally take. I just can't even. And you know, the weird thing is that, like, you know, they say, like, you know, don't drive and don't operate, you know, motor equipment or whatever. But just the law of averages is such that they give the drugs like this out to so many people. And it's like, brother got to eat. You know, which means a brother got to, you know, work, which sometimes means brother got to operate a forklift. And you just got to wonder, like, how many people out there at any given moment are really just, like, swacked out of their brain on something and really shouldn't be doing whatever it is they're doing.
Well, this visceral stuff also is prescribed to people for social anxiety disorder.
Nah.
And so granted, I guess that if you're suffering anxiety, you are really revved up and really – and so maybe this brings you down. But I'm thinking, you know, I take this stuff and it puts me to sleep.
Right.
So if my problem is social anxiety disorder, it seems to me that, guys, I think about that and I think you're anxious because you have to deal with people.
Right.
Well, drugging yourself so you're just standing there going, and drooling on yourself, that's really not helping the problem any, is it?
No, and especially, like, again, with, like, Ativan, which is sort of like Xanax, and it's an anti-anxiety drug that they give it to you if you're all, you know, if you're all nervous and weirded out and freaked out and, you know, you're bugged about something. But they also do it for social anxiety. And it's like, it seems, I guess it would solve the problem in the sense that, like, you just don't care anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I can't function, at a cocktail party talking to people. But, you know, guess what? That doesn't bother me at all.
Now I'm just sitting in the corner looking at my shoelaces.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess the problem's solved.
Or somebody, you know, hey, Rick, you're being kind of quiet. And you just go, yeah. And then you just go back to staring at the canopy, like, you know, for the rest of the night or whatever. Well, I will just say that so I've had not a problem, but I've just, you know, for whatever reason, it was one of those nights where I went to bed at, like, you know, 4 or whatever, thinking, and I set my alarm for, you know, I now, ever since the great oversleep, the great non-wake.
Yes.
I now, on my iPhone, I have three different alarms at staggered times that I set. Because, you know, a problem we're solving is worth over-solving. So I have three different alarms on my iPhone, and then I have a fourth, like a mechanical alarm in our bedroom, which is the only one my wife needs because she's got a normal brain. So she actually has this one. It's one of those, and it's one of those gay. It's one of those Zen things where it which is actually kind of great. I make fun of it, but it's sort of cool. It's like a bell.
Light thing?
No. Well, it's the same idea. It's a bell, you know, with like a hammer striking a bell, but it starts very, very quietly, and then it waits like 10 minutes. So you got to set it like half an hour before you really want to get up. very quietly for once, and then it waits 10 minutes, and does it slightly louder, and then it waits 5 minutes, and then slightly louder. And the idea is that you're not going like, oh, okay, I'm awake, you know, out of my REM cycle. It's that it gradually wakes you up, kind of like the light thing.
Yeah, I've always wanted one of those light ones, because I think that would work well for me, because my thing is I really, really, really hate to be startled or jarred or screwed with in any way before I've had some coffee and I'm awake. And so the alarm just going off and scaring me just – it is horrible.
Did you ever have this? Let me ask you this. Did you ever have the squarish plastic alarm clock from like West Clocks? And it had the alarm where it was like the metal tab you pull out on the back. And that's, first of all, I don't know what's inside that thing. Some demon that makes that noise. The, you know, that.
Yeah.
But it's, but then, did you ever notice this with those alarms? With, again, with the old school kind with the metal tab. There was this like pre-alarm noise that it would make about 10 seconds before the alarm went off. And it was sort of a, you know,
oh,
and
yes.
It would just like ramp up. Ah. And I got to the point where it's like I would to hear the ramp up and it would no leaping over the, you know, to the other side of the room to try to turn it off. Also, let me just tell you this, what I'm going to do when I'm president. As part of an Emerson administration, I say, as though there will be elections ever again, I'm going to find the guy who created that one alarm clock ring that goes that we've all heard like a million times, like the stock dual tone dissonant beep.
That's the one that they use on TV and in movies now all the time as the laid in sound effect for the alarm going off.
Which, you know, we had we passed a rule about it at CBS for the production department, telling them to leave that out of commercials because people would just turn the radio off. I would. But I'm going to find the guy who created that, and we're going to kill him in the middle of the Super Bowl at halftime.
That sound actually always makes me think of The Tick, because The Tick, the animated Tick cartoon started with that sound. Right before the music started, it was his alarm going off, and it was that stock sound effect. When I was in high school, I had one of those horrible Timex Big Ben clocks, the big brass alarm clock with the bells, and I had to actually hide it on the floor.
It's like the round with the bells on top, and the sort of old, the really old school looking one.
Yeah, and it goes off really loud.
And there's the hammer between the two.
Yes, it just goes clack 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 clack, and it's really loud. And that was good, you know, alarm-wise, but the thing is, it would keep me awake because it ticked really loud. And so I had this whole habit I had to get into before I'd go to bed, and then I would put it on the floor by the bed and then put a pillow on top of it.
Right.
Because that way the ticking wouldn't keep me awake all night, and then the alarm would be muffled so it didn't terrify me when it went off in the morning.
And it simulates mother's heartbeat.
Sure.
Well, you're supposed to wrap it in a towel and put it with puppies.
Oh.
Because it's like being in the womb.
Yes, okay.
Anyway, but so is that now? But the ticking wouldn't bother you.
Bothered me.
But was it for that, and then also because the alarm was just so freaking loud?
It was for both. Yeah.
And there was no way to modulate that, like with the old alarm clocks. It was like it was an on or off thing with those. I strongly recommend it. They're a little pricey, but it really is. It really is a thing that is worth it if you at some point find, and you can get them more cheaply. Powell's sells them, actually, those Zen clocks. It is from a company, I swear to God, they're called Now and Zen, but they make the one that is just the slow increase in volume and speed of the chiming, and then there's one that actually has the lights, too. A world of difference it makes.
Yeah, the light thing I think would be excellent for me because light does wake me up. So I like that whole idea that it very slowly over the course of like an hour just starts getting lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter. So it wakes you up gradually and doesn't startle you.
And it feels better, you know why? Because it's like it's your idea.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm awake because I want to be, you know, as opposed to like, I'm awake because the hateful, stupid machine on the other side of the room rousted me.
Well, it gives your brain time to adjust and go, oh, it's daytime now.
Right.
There's light.
Right. As opposed to like, you know, when you're like you're napping and somebody goes, Don, you awake? And you're like, okay.
Your heart is pounding and then you just immediately just want to punch something.
Well, and it's like the worst thing is like if you're napping and then it's like somebody interrupts your like REM cycle or whatever, which is a very real thing. I mean, people can, you know, laugh at it. That's a real thing your brain needs. And my friend Roger put this the right way. I have never heard it put better than this. He's like, if you're taking an afternoon nap and you get about 15 minutes into it and if you're napping, that's the sweetest sleep of all because you really need it by definition. It's like water when you're thirsty. You get like 15 minutes into a nap and if somebody comes in and it's like, you know, hey, sport, we're going to miss the movie. And they wake you up. He said it's like you spend the rest of the day, no matter what you do and no matter how you have coffee or anything, the rest of the day you walk around like somebody took a cheese grater to your skin.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like you're just like your nerves are just raw. And it's like nothing will fix it but going to bed and waking up the next day. So anyway, this is all by way of saying that I went to bed last night, like, I don't know, my 4 a.m. or whatever. The alarm set for like, you know, 9, 9:10, 9:20, whatever. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter. Went to bed at 4, 7 a.m., just wide awake, you know, and obviously just woke up like, yeah. Okay, I guess I'm awake now. I guess I'm not going back to sleep. Where you instantly know there is no going back to sleep. So I laid there for like 2 minutes and just thinking like, Christ. And then I spent another 2 minutes gradually like walking my slowly through the bedroom so as not to like wake up any but like the dogs or anything. Because then it was just going to be like, you know, then it's like one wakes up the other and then you got to feed them. Then you take them outside and that's where the sun is and it's a bad thing. So I woke up and I went into my home office and I was just sitting there just staring at the computer like stupid, hateful day, awake, stupid. And it was too early to really do anything. Like, I've had my, you know, visa or whatever, but it's like I wasn't really awake. I'm like, I can't really answer any emails because I can't really think. I don't know. What should I do? Maybe I should catch up on something. Well, I already watched Portlandia. I already got, let's see, no house yet. I don't want to start a new series this morning. I could read. I'm not awake enough to read. I'll watch a movie that I've been putting off. Let's see. What do I have in my pile of movies that I've been meaning to watch? So you know what I watched this morning? You will never guess in a jillion billion years unless you looked at my notes.
Did you finally watch The 5,000 Figures of Dr. T?
No. Here's why. And I apologize for this. But you know why I didn't do that is because the online rental service from which I obtained that, it was like it's like a disc image, so it's like I have to burn it before I can watch it.
Okay.
So I don't know what that's all about. That was like the only way I could find it, and it's like, and I looked, I couldn't rent it anywhere. It's like I even like, what's his name, like Mike Clark's Movie Madness didn't have it, but it was like a disc image, like a TSO or something. And so like I have to burn that, I guess. But no, so I do apologize because I have that. No, you'll never in a jillion years guess, and I don't really have a good explanation for this. So this morning, because I woke up at 7, I couldn't sleep. I watched Jade. With David Caruso.
And, you're right. I would never have guessed that.
And Chaz Palminteri. Wow, what a bad movie that is.
Yeah.
That's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. It's a movie.
First of all, you got the name Joe Esterhaus, like, plastered all over that. That should be a clue right there.
Well, you know, and here's the thing. I am not the Joe Esterhaus hater that some are. Oh. I embrace most of his oeuvre. Not all of it, but I quite like the work of Joe Esterhaus. But it's like you're thinking Joe Esterhaus, but you think, okay, you got your William Friedkin. You know, The French Connection, mm-hmm. The Exorcist. You got your Chaz.
Cruisin'.
You got your Chaz Palminteri. You got your David Caruso. Not a great actor, but I mean, sort of in the right mode. Sort of delivers it in an over the top sort of entertaining way. Who's Linda Fiorentino.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask.
She can be good. She's sort of a poor woman's Michelle Forbes. But you're thinking, okay, you know, there's maybe a little something here. But here's a guy who's a real wild card. I don't know if you remember who else is in Jade.
I do not.
This is a guy, it's like you're flipping a coin every time you see this guy in a movie. Michael Biehn.
Yeah.
Because that's a thing where he's either Johnny Ringo or he's like this guy in Jade.
And the thing is, he has sometimes, like as Johnny Ringo, he has stumbled into good roles occasionally.
Yeah, accidentally.
Not a good actor.
No. And again, like you see him in like a Cameron film where Cameron has written he's written to type, you know. Cameron's like, you're going to be a jarhead, da, 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 and then just writes it out that way. But it's like you see him trying to like actually, you know, act. It's bad, baby. It's all kinds of bad. But it's like, and Jade is so bad, it's bad from the opening sequence. The opening sequence is terrible. It's like jaw-droppingly bad. And by the way, James Horner, who does the score, can't believe I'm talking this much about Jade. James Horner does the score. He actually just rips himself off because the closing sequence is just the Aliens finale that he just clearly like ran out of time and was like, what do I have sitting around? Ooh, she launches grenades into the mother xenomorph. And that's it. Like, it's so bad. Mm. And spoilers, lol.
So did you watch this whole thing from start to finish? Like, even though it was terrible, you just sat there and you started it, you just decided, what the hell, I'm just going to keep going?
It's like drinking a spittoon, Don. You can't stop. You know how long Jade is? Jade is like 78 minutes. I mean, and that's like part of that is credits, I think. It's terrible. But I'm watching it, and it's just and improbably, you know, that like the hook of Jade, wait, I'm going to say the hook. One of the big like pivotal plot points of Jade is that like Linda Fiorentino plays an escort who apparently is much in demand. I'm just saying this because it's true. There's no other way to say this. She's apparently much in demand as a hoe because she's exceptionally skilled at a sex act that you have often wondered about, and you've wondered why porn films seem so obsessed by it.
Oh, yes.
And is that it's that most painful and uncomfortable. It's the having sex in the back of a Volkswagen. Mm-hmm. It's that. And it's like she's apparently like that's her specialty.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah. And that's like why she's so in demand. Like wow. by Richard Crenna, of all people.
Oh.
What is that? What is up with that? So anyway. So there you go.
I had one movie-related thing I wanted to share. I saw The Green Hornet this weekend, and directed by Michel Gondry, who I am
yes.
I am a huge fan of
we
Michel Gondry.
We talked about him
Friday. It's not a horrible movie. It's not an especially great movie either. Personally, I think it's fairly well done, but I think that, you know, the whole Seth Rogen's dumb smartass thing
right.
can just wears a little bit thin after a while. Michel Gondry does an excellent job of directing the action sequences, basically by slowing everything down and doing all kinds of interesting slow down visual trickery kind of digital stuff to rather than the hyperkinetic, overly like frenetic, super edited stuff.
Now, is it like the 300 thing though?
A little bit, yeah.
Because that's a thing that is. It's good. The 300, you know, and the director's name is escaping me at the moment. He's the Watchmen guy.
Yeah.
Zack Snyder. That's a thing like Bullet Time where it's interesting, yeah. but then like it wears out real quick on me.
I mean, yeah, and it's fine. And then there's this whole the whole end of the movie is just it's so full of explosions and cars crashing and people jumping and leaping and screaming and stuff. It just gets a little much at the time. But the one quibble, little problem I had with the movie, is that you could tell it was kind of re-engineered a little bit, where they said, okay, we want to have, we got to find a good place for all of the action and the fighting and stuff to happen at the end of the movie. Well, what would be significant would be if it happens at the Daily Sentinel, the newspaper that Britt Reed has
right.
inherited from his father, which is, so at some point they have to figure out, well, how will we get him there? How will we get him and all of – as the Green Hornet
right.
and all of the bad guys there? So what happened was he meets with this district attorney who is dirty, talks to him, gets him to admit that he's dirty, goes, aha, I have recorded you on this flash drive. And he now needs – and I am not making this up. They need to get to the Daily Sentinel being chased by all the bad guys
right.
because he needs to upload this to the newspaper's website. So that the world can hear this. Because apparently the newspaper's website, like the internet, is at that building.
It only goes there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they have to like drive across town with all the bad guys chasing them stuff to get to the Daily Sentinel so he can throw this on the,
you know,
the newspaper's website.
You know, Thomas Gill, just with like two fingers. He's in Seattle right now. You know, he can actually just reach over and just start typing stuff on this computer that's in front of me. We're in Portland.
Yeah.
Occasionally, sometimes I'm here late at night and he and I are working on something. I'll look over and he's opened the little text pad and he just types, I am here.
Now, granted, I understand that if you're watching a movie, watching yeah. a guy plug a flash drive into the side of his laptop and then make a phone call to a webmaster and say, I'm sending you a file, isn't nearly as exciting as watching him drive across town with guys shooting at him with machine guns.
Do they not have email anywhere?
No, they had to go to...
Is it set in 2011? Although there's a flash drive, so it has to be set in the now.
No, he had to go to the newspaper office.
And
he had to go all the way up in the elevator to go to the floor...
The server room.
That his office is on, because apparently he had to do it from his office.
That's where the tube comes
down.
Where
the tube was.
So the internet is like one of those big like vacuum things at the bank where and it just takes it away. Nobody in the movie said like, but Bob,
No.
We got Wi-Fi at Starbucks.
It was just, I got to get this on our website. We have to get to the Daily Sentinel.
Does nobody, and I'm not asking this rhetorically because I don't want it to be like those fat cats in Washington, but Hollywood's so out of touch with whatever, normal people, but it's like they had to screen this for somebody at some point, whether a focus group or critics, or didn't somebody go like, you could do it from anywhere?
Yeah, even that god-awful Sandra Bullock movie, The Net, she knew that all she needed to do was just find a computer.
Yeah.
Any computer.
Or, you know,
and that was 15 years ago.
Or like an iPhone or a BlackBerry or, you know, whatever. I mean, they basically come with a fill up of your gas tank now. That's just sad.
Yeah.
And also, like, don't you feel like they just, like, that is where they're just peeing on you. as an audience member. They go, they'll never notice. They're idiots.
Yes, exactly. They'll never think about this.
You know, here's, by the way, and just as a side note, and we got to do some stuff because we got to get out of here in like 15 minutes. But the other thing is, you know what I don't ever need to see again, ever, 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 ever. Stop it, stop it, stop it with a secretly taped recording. You know, the secret, the conversation, you know, you're right. I did do it. And I do it again. I'm completely guilty. Guilty as sin. I killed the bastard. And then it's like, you know, and then Bud Fox is like recording the whole thing. I don't ever need to see that again. Ever.
Yeah. You
ever.
Know, you can always just testify in court that the guy said it to you.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, especially when it's like a cop, like, on, goddamn, they did that on spoiler. They did it on Luther, which is a show that I really. It's not a bad show. It's not nearly as good as I was hoping it would be. But, I mean, it's good because Idris Elba's great. But it's like, come on. Really? You know, where it's like, so tell me exactly how you did this. And the bad guy just unspools the whole thing. And then it's like Elba. And then it's like Idris Elba. And then he brings out, like, the mini cassette recorder. Like, because he doesn't have, you know, he doesn't have, like, you know, a phone either where you could just press a button that says voice memo or something. We're the only smart people in the world, Don.
No.
And Cheryl, who could destroy us. And Thomas. Mm-hmm. And Bruce, for the same reason. Have we done any news?
Not really, no.
Not as such.
No.
And now, from the news desk.
Not per se.
This is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our snuff watch.
Here's your snuff watch for Monday. Dawn Taylor with your snuff watch from Monday.
Jack LaLanne, father of the modern fitness movement, inventor of exercise machines, and founder of the nation's first health club, died of pneumonia in his Morro Bay, California home today. He was 96.
Good for him.
LaLanne launched his fitness crusade in the 1950s after being converted at a
drink for the garden hose. Do it.
At a revival-style nutrition lecture, following years of unhealthy eating, LaLanne was told he was a walking garbage can and spent the next six decades promoting exercise and entertaining the public with his bizarre antics. He recruited gym members by looking for fat kids at an Oakland high school, and when he was 60, he swam from Alcatraz Island to San Francisco, towing a 1,000-pound boat.
Awesome.
For many years, he concluded his TV shows with his own goodbye song to the tune of O Sole Mio.
It's time to leave you. Let's say goodbye. These precious moments just seem to fly. Now here's my wish for you. May the good Lord bless and keep you too.
And then he just punches through a wall.
He once said, when I first started out, I was considered a crackpot. The doctors used to say, don't go to that Jack LaLanne. You'll get hemorrhoids. You won't get an erection. You women will look like men. You athletes will get muscle bound. That's what I had to go through. He opened his first gym in 1936 called LaLanne's Physical Culture Studio.
That's so great.
It was in Oakland, California, and later sold to Bally Total Fitness. And by the 1960s, he was the reigning push-up and pull-up champ of Muscle Beach on the Venice Boardwalk. In 1995, I believe.
Sorry.
He drew attention by swimming from Alcatraz to San Francisco in handcuffs. I guess it was 1955. He swam from Alcatraz to San Francisco in handcuffs. Here's coverage of that event from the Universal Newsreel.
Jack LaLanne is going to prove that it can be done the hard way, handcuffed. Of course, Jack doesn't start from the rock itself, only near it. He's a law-abiding citizen, merely out to prove that a man in good condition with strong legs could swim the 3 miles of rough water to San Francisco with his hands in braces.
That's so great. What was the name of his club when he started it?
It was LaLanne's Physical Culture Studio.
That's so great, with a variety of tonics available for you.
When I was 6 years old, when I turned six, there was a local TV show on Channel 11 in L.A. called Checo the Clown, Checo the Birthday Clown. And I got to be on Checo the Birthday Clown when I turned six.
Was
I was one
Chucko?
Of the birthday kids. Yes, Checo. And right after, I guess it was, Checo in the same studio system, Metro Media Studios in L.A., Jack LaLanne did his show there. And when I was on Checo the Birthday Clown, it was so exciting because during the show, Jack LaLanne came through the studio with his two big white dogs that always accompany him during his exercise show. So I get to actually see Jacqueline. That was almost as exciting as being on the Chucko the Clown Show.
Well, because he was one of the first guys, him and probably Charles Atlas. Is the only other guy I can think of, and Charles Atlas, who of course made his bones, as they say, in comic books. It was the whole, like, the guy getting the sand kicked in his face. But those are the two, and it is, you know, and I'm not a health freak in terms of working out or exercise or whatever. And there is a lot of that stuff that is just crazy. But it is also true, I think, that, you know, that earlier there was like a weird resistance to it, that it was somehow that it would have these bizarre, like, women, your breasts will vanish, you know, or just like a lot of like weird superstitions almost about it.
Well, even like 10 years ago, I remember I was working on losing a bunch of weight, and I was exercising. And even 10 years ago, there were a lot of people that would say women shouldn't work out with weights.
Right.
Because, you know, you'll get big, manly muscles, which is just complete nonsense. But, yeah, no, there's always been a lot of ridiculous stuff about exercise. And Jack LaLanne, God bless him, you know, he led the charge with ladies at home. My mom was one of those ladies at home getting down on the floor and doing the sit-ups with Jack LaLanne.
Ladies, health is for you, too, not just for your husband. Excellent. Well, there you go. 96 years of age. There you go. Jack LaLanne. There's your snuff watch.
The Cheney watch can wait until tomorrow, but I did have this one local story I wanted to read. Do you have the sound that I put
this
up
is
there?
In the Dropbox
yes.
Folder? Let me just get that ready. I was queuing up the EH vending sound. Okay. This is this Oak?
Yes.
Okay, that is it's just the one?
Yes.
Yeah, I've got that.
Okay. The Oak Hills Homeowner Association is mounting a fight against Washington County's plan to widen Bethany Boulevard, a plan that would result in taking off several pieces of land from residents. More than 100 residents gathered at the Neighborhood Recreation Center in a display of unity on Sunday. The group is battling against the county's plans to expand Bethany Boulevard from 2 lanes to 5 lanes. And the thing is, it's necessary. Metro has said, you know, they've done all their projections, and traffic already along that corridor is horrible, and it's going to get even worse over the next 5 to 10 years. The residents, of course, don't want this because, yeah, they're going to have to slice off parts of people's yards to make a broader thing. So residents are hoping 3 lanes will present a viable compromise. They were holding signs and chanting, 3, not 5, 3, not 5. There was one fellow, a resident, who said, and I liked this guy, that they say the road is for the greater good, but he says, you know, that's what happened in California and other places. They just keep making wide roads and people are driving everywhere. He was great. So the neighbors will have an opportunity to make their case directly to Washington County commissioners on February 22nd. But this was the soundbite that I pulled. This basically, this is a child dutifully repeating what her parents have told her to say.
Oak Hills is a really special neighborhood. I feel like it's different than just every other neighborhood. And I feel like if they built 5 lanes right next to it, it wouldn't be so special.
All right.
Yes.
That's a pat on the head for not screwing it up in front of the camera.
And then I just want to pull a kid aside and say, okay, why would a 5-lane road make your neighborhood not as special?
Well, it's you just want this. You want, I mean, and you understand why they don't, because it would look like a dick move. But that's the thing, where in some weird, evil part of your brain, you just want the news guy to ask one follow-up question.
Just
like,
one.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. Do you know what anything means that you just said? Why is your neighborhood special?
And also, well, you know what, speaking of things from a bygone era, I don't know if you ever watched the Kids Say the Darndest Thing show, the old Art Linkletter show. But that was a show where Art Linkletter, and I know I sound like I'm 1,000 years old, but Art Linkletter would have kids on. And
we don't get the Walton music when you're telling these stories.
Sorry, I can do that. Hold on. Kids, let me tell you about Art Linkletter. And so Kids Say the Darndest Things, which I think they tried to revive with Bill Cosby a few years ago, is where he would just spend like half an hour or whatever, minus commercials, interviewing children, because the theory was that if you ask kids adult, you know, grown-up questions or ask them about grown-up things, they would just say something. They would say something funny. So like, you know, if a cat has kittens, does a kid have kidneys? You know, or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And so one of the things he determined early on is that you would get great reactions from the kids if you would ask them what their parents had told them not to do or say. And it would be like, Jimmy, is there anything your mom told you not to do or not to say? It's like, well, she did ask me to talk about, how great dad is, and not to mention the fact that he vomits every morning and then he comes home a lot, you know, reeking of other ladies' perfume or whatever. You know, or mom asked me not to scratch my crotch so much when I'm on camera. She says it doesn't look very very ladylike, you know. And so he would just find the run at the end run around, like, whatever the parents had sort of tried to wheedle them into saying. And that's, you understand why they don't, but you kind of do wish that they would just ask the kid one more.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same thing in presidential debates, too, which seems strange, but it's where you always have them to ask the follow-up question to Sarah Palin or Joe Biden or whoever, because you know that there's just nothing behind it. You know, it is just like this totally, like, memorized, you know, like, facade of an answer.
And they're counting on the fact that everyone will just accept the statement and not question it in any way.
And then we all go, well, because everybody watching goes, especially, let's be honest, if you're anywhere near any place called Bethany, they just go, oh, children, that's so cute, it's wonderful. And then, you know, and then everybody just sort of smiles. And then a guy says, that's really something, Judy. And then he shuffles some paper. We should take this moment to give out our first clue this week, and then we're going to wrap this whole thing up. So this is the first clue for our EH vending contest. Cheryl, by the way, who, back when we were talking about how we fear her, she then sent, I swear to God, an emoticon of a smiley face, which then frowns or, like, snarls, showing its teeth. And then it turns red and it explodes. And then she put below it, fear me. So there you go. Mission accomplished. Done and done. So she has asked me to... Don, I'm going to quiz you for this segment.
Okay.
In Soviet Russia, I will quiz you. So last week, you know, we gave out these four questions. Supposed to be five, but it was four questions. And they were about various, you know, vending machine related areas of existence, such as what city has, vending machines to dispense pot. That was L.A. Where was the first vending machine to dispense gold bars? That was Dubai. What country has the most vending machines? That
Japan.
Was Japan.
I
guess I should give the second half of this first. So I believe last week we had not said at any point. Relatives or employees, partners, managers, de facto employees or partners of ENN probably know all the answers, but probably shouldn't be eligible to win. Because I did not give that disclaimer, who do you think the winner from last week is? Don't act like you're having to think about it.
No, I don't know.
Think about the people who listen to this show every day.
Okay.
Think about...
Aaron Duran. No, Thomas Gill.
There you go.
There we go. Thomas
there
Gill.
You go. Fantastic. And I realized, she was like, you know, nobody got all of them right. And then she put, had an ellipsis and she said, except for Thomas Gill. And so I realized that, you know, and in the spirit of fairness, at no point did I say, like,
that's
this
true.
Excludes you, Thomas Gill, especially because Thomas Gill is the guy who basically keeps us on the air all the time.
Yeah.
And out of the goodness of his heart. And also...
And we failed to say that employees of the Emerson News Network are not eligible.
And also, I failed to say, like, and if you're the smartest guy on the planet, maybe we should just send you, like, a big box of stuff out of acknowledgement of the fact that you will undoubtedly win this.
That's true.
So for this week... plunging into it this week, and actually nobody else got them all right either. Even with the power of the great and mighty Google. You know why? It's because they didn't have access to that Sentinel building where the internet is. Only Thomas Gill gets to go there.
Okay.
So for this week, we will move on to a new round of questions, and we will say that partners, employees, relatives, friends, colleagues, de facto, of ENN will be... excluded for this week.
It's kind of like when we were doing that that movie presentation thing, the manga and the anime films and stuff, and you were asking trivia questions ahead of time, and my husband got one of them.
Yeah, and I had to say, like, no, ixnay,
and you,
mustn't.
And you said, wait a minute, is that Patrick?
Nah,
he's like,
right.
Yeah.
Here's what we're going to do this week. It's a variation on last week's contest. This week, we will give out one clue every day. We are thinking of a specific snack food. It is a purchasable snack food, something you can go to the store and buy. It is a single snack food, and we are going to give out one clue every day. Here's the deal. You can't, you can guess before Friday if you want to, but guesses will not be counted until Friday. You must wait until Friday's clue is given out before you submit your guess. You do that via snack. That is S-N-A-C-K, snack at rickemerson.com. Snack at rickemerson.com. And so once Friday's clue has been given out, The first person to correctly identify this snack item via snack@rickemerson.com will win. And have you seen the gift baskets over here from EH Vending?
I do. They're actually gift bags.
Gift bags. Really. They're fantabulous. They're something.
Chock full of snacks.
I had to carry those up from Bruce Agler's trunk outside, so I got to tell you that they really are heavy. There's a lot of stuff in there. So the first person to correctly identify this snack on Friday via snack@rickemerson.com, once we've given out Friday's clue, will win one of these snack bags from EH Vending. You can find out more about EH Vending by going to their website. It is, of course, ehvending.com. If you're not happy with your current vending provider, if you never really see them, they don't come by often enough, you feel like the place has turned into, as one child said on Kids Say the Darndest Things, a clip joint, then, you know, you can find a better deal for yourself. And that deal can be found at EH Vending. You contact Josh, the owner, at 360-816-1853. Or James, who is the sales manager, you can contact him at 503-897-8204. Whether this is traditional vending items, you know, the snack machines, the soda machines, to coffee supply.
They do the coffee machines and things, too.
The whole thing. It's like, and where you get the coffee, you get the coffee, you get the carafe, you get the sugar, you get the, the little, like, wooden stirry things. Do they still do the plastic stirring things, or is it all wood now?
I don't know. I saw both. They have both plastic and wood at 7-Eleven, which, by the way, has become quite elaborate with their coffee service. But, I don't know. I think when I was at the hospital using the vending machines at the hospital, I think both were available.
Here's the thing that I think about sometimes. I wonder if the company that makes the paper cups for coffee that you have to have now because you can't have anything in styrofoam, and then sometimes you'll get that paper that has that weird, gummy, quasi-styrofoam sort of coating on it, and it feels like the whole thing is going to melt in your hands. It feels like you got something that had, it feels like something that was like next to the honey jar in the cupboard or whatever. I wonder if that's the same company that makes the paper sleeves, or if like a whole separate industry had to spring up overnight because people were just burning their hands and nobody thought to make sleeves for anything.
I don't know. I'll bet the paper sleeves come from somewhere else. I just remember at KUFO, there were these paper
cups. That's
what
I'm talking about.
And they were like the worst cups ever.
They were terrible. No, they were awful.
Like 10 minutes after you started drinking your coffee, it would start seeping through the bottom of the cup.
And the thing turned like gelatinous and perforated on you. Yeah, you don't want that. You contact EH Vending if you are unhappy with the hot-to-the-touch gummy cups that you're being given by your current vendor. EHVending.com is the website. EHVending.com. Do please tell them you heard it right here at the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Today's clue is cheese. That's today's clue. So again, we're thinking of a specific snack. You can guess now, but we're just going to we're going to pretend it didn't come in. So you got to wait until Friday when the final clue for the week is given out, and then the first correct guess at snack@rickemerson.com wins the next gift bag from EH Vending. Today's clue is cheese. So there you go. Thank you. All right. On that note, ladies and gentlefolk, we should probably draw the curtain down on this episode of the program. We're going to make way for Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler. They're going to be in next, taping Fun Employment Radio, which you can hear around 6 o'clock Pacific time at funemploymentradio.com. We want to thank our guests, including Aaron Geek in the city Duran, as well as Eric D. Snyder from ericdsnyder.com. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. After a brief musical interlude, today's Legion of News Encore is followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. Thank you for listening. It is Monday, January 24th, and that is the frequency, Kenneth. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.